Hello, everybody, and welcome to another week of the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, here to entertain your earbuds. And you know what, Jay? They finally put it on the schedule. We're on till 2.
We're on till 2.
That's right. It's on the now we're not just cheating that extra hour.
Well, why don't you tell me, Dave, I had a hot date tonight?
Well, go ahead.
No, I so didn't have a hot date. Come on. How believable was that?
It sounded, you know what, Jay? It's plausible.
Dave, you're my hot date tonight.
Well, I hope I hope that I make you happy.
Then it's going to be a hot date then. Good.
Great show tonight. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but we've got ourselves some great guests, and I'm really excited to hit up some topics that don't get talked about a lot.
Quite the diverse group we have up tonight.
We've got Richard Burnett on the show tonight, who many of you know from The Hour. He was the editor of The Hour until it closed down so unfortunately last year. Writes $3 Bill, which, again, is a column that I grew up reading in The Hour. $3 Bill is now a blog. Richard Burnett is a wonderful journalist and a very acclaimed gay rights activist. And we're going to talk about Brian Burke, and we're going to talk about the one taboo that really remains in professional sports, at least in the male side of professional sports.
Yeah, that's I'm actually very, very anxious to hear what he has to say. And to hear what you're going to ask him.
Yeah, well, Jay, don't worry. You're in on it, too.
Oh, what? Oh, yeah, okay. All right.
This is our show, man.
No, okay.
You get to, if you have something you want to pipe in with, by all means.
Oh, I'm sure something will come up.
What I find very interesting, Richard Burnett is a huge baseball fan. I've noticed that through his writings. He's always talked about the Expos and his stuff before. It's why I followed him on Twitter. His avatar is Jackie Robinson.
Nice.
So is his Facebook photo, or his Facebook photo is of Jackie Robinson. I see the parallel, and I think I know what he's getting at, and I very much look forward to talking to him. I wonder if he thinks of Brian Burke as a modern day Branch Rickey.
Well, maybe in his own way he is. I mean, it's all about breaking down barriers, right? And whoever breaks them down the hardest, well, if you get a label like Branch Rickey, why not? It's nothing but a compliment. Believe me,
absolutely. And, of course, the wonderful Montreal tie-in of all of that with Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's professional color barrier. Huh. More of an unprofessional color barrier, if you ask me.
Yeah, it was clearly unprofessional. It was not exactly the most stand-up type barrier.
Weird to think of, all the records and all of the reverence that we hold for guys like Babe Ruth or Christy Mathewson or Honus Wagner. And really, there was no even playing field there.
No, not at all. In fact, it was 50% of the playing field when there were a lot of Negro League teams and barnstorming black teams that were not involved in professional baseball whatsoever.
And people argue that Josh Gibson hit more home runs than Babe Ruth. It just was never quantified because they didn't have the stats.
No, they say perhaps 800 to 900 home runs he hit in his career.
So needless to say, we've got Richard Burnett on, and we're definitely going to be discussing gays in sports and in society. And whether, you know, I don't feel comfortable saying, yes, somebody should come out. I don't have the right.
No. I mean, it's not something that you can really speak on if you haven't lived it yet. It's clear that, it's how can you and I say something like that?
Right.
You know?
Right. So we're going to have Richard Burnett on, and he's going to talk about it with a little bit more authority than Jay or I could possibly provide to you. Little after that, we've got Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace on the show, which is really pretty cool. Our Lady Peace has been making... you like that, Jimmy? Yeah, you look pretty impressed. Our Lady Peace has been around for 20 years, and Jeremy was 17 when he joined Our Lady Peace. 6 months later, the Toronto Blue Jays won their second World Series. We'll ask him if it's the curse of Our Lady Peace that the Jays haven't won since.
Why would that even? Oh, my goodness, Kaufman. Yeah, I'm sure he'll enjoy that question. Coming out with all the hard questions tonight, Kaufman.
Now, I know that you mentioned a memory to do with Our Lady Peace that I'm excited to talk about as well.
Yes. Yes, that involves this station.
And, exactly.
Perhaps, I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later on.
We will. We might touch on it a few times.
Yeah. But, I'll ask Jeremy about it.
Absolutely. We'll then, in the third hour of the show, which we can now admit to in the first hour of the show, we have Travis Reitzma from The Score getting blanked. Fantastic writer, really cool dude. You're all going to like him.
Baseball guy, so he's all right with me.
Exactly, exactly. And really knows his stats. He knows more about baseball than I'll ever.
Wow.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you know your baseball, my friend.
I do, but I'm rusty on the modern stuff.
Yeah, well, so am I. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to keep track nowadays when you have such a broken heart.
Now, I added a late guest, Jay. I don't know if you saw. Someone I'm very excited to introduce to all of you.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. His name is Translaureate. You know what Babelfish is?
Babelfish?
Yeah.
Wasn't that a really bad Francis Ford Coppola film in the early 80s? Oh, no, that was Rumblefish.
Yes.
Never mind then.
No, that Rumblefish was an S.E. Hinton novel, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
All right.
And a bad movie.
All right, well, look at us go.
Okay.
Well, Babelfish is also a translating system on the internet. And we are going to be speaking with Brett Laurie's Babelfish. This is the Brett Laurie translator. We're going to have the top five Brett Laurie tweets of the week. Then we're going to translate them for you. I don't know if any of you remember a few weeks back when we had Brett Laurie on the program, but he talks like a kid. You know, he was talking about his first major league home run and how it was so nice to have the opportunity to shine.
To shine.
To shine.
To shine.
That's right.
I wonder what the translation of that would be.
I will have to ask the translator.
Okay.
The Babelfish.
Well, that's what we got him for.
I think that the Babelfish is in Arizona right now, getting ready for spring training, working out, sort of eavesdropping behind Brett Laurie at the gym. And you get the kind
taking
of things
notes.
Like Laurie will write, "Yeah, buddy," in a hashtag with like eight A's and four E's. And the translator will just take it and capital idea.
Okay. I'm very interested to see what he has to say.
So we're all over the place tonight. What else is new?
What else is new?
And,
yeah, diverse
should,
as ever.
Should be a lot of fun. I do want to talk about, can we call it the Super Bowl? Or do we have to be like a TV ad and be like, oh, the big game? Or
no, it was the Super Bowl.
It was, right?
It was the Super Bowl. It looked exactly like a Super Bowl. And it was the 46th Super Bowl.
Well, there you go. I thought it was a fantastic Super Bowl.
Did you?
Yeah. You can tell I wanted the Giants to win, and I can tell you wanted the Patriots.
I didn't want. I'm a Raiders fan. I had no stake in the outcome whatsoever. I just wanted to see a football game, and as it goes compared to other NFL games, I thought it was an average game. It had a nice ending, but that's about it.
The ending was a little bit of a denouement with that.
A denouement.
Yeah, a letdown.
Okay.
Yes. With that. Well, he fell ass backwards into the end zone, Bradshaw.
Yes, he did.
It was the whoopsie. Game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, four bobbled passes in a row that all should have been caught, and it killed them in the end. Got to catch them. My coach always said, if you touch the football, you got to catch it. If you touch the baseball, you got to catch it.
Yeah, easy to say.
Yeah, of course.
At least you're not.
My coach never played in the Super Bowl, so.
Well, Mario Manningham sure made a catch. And I know Wes Welker, that ball was behind him, but
yeah.
If anybody wants to go out and blame Tom Brady, go say it to his face.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, I got a bone to pick.
There was a Bruce Arthur tweet last night when Brady was just ripping it up in the middle of his 16 for 16, where he said that Tom Brady could be married to two supermodels.
Okay.
He was on fire at a certain point. It's amazing how short people's memories are.
Yeah,
he gave up the safety. That was a stupid play. Took him a while to get out of the funk. You know, I've said it 2 weeks in a row. The Patriots did not deserve to be in that Super Bowl. They beat one above 500 team all season long, the Denver Broncos. And then in the semifinal, they beat Baltimore. Brady doesn't even throw a touchdown. I'd much rather talk about the halftime show.
A lot of people, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. I probably have a few words, but people could say the same thing about the New York Giants being a 9-7 team. I mean, do they deserve to be there? I mean, they lost to a lot of good teams. There was a run there where they were going up against some pretty good teams, and they lost. Both teams didn't deserve to be there. The Oakland Raiders did, and that's all I have to say.
The Washington Redskins beat the Giants twice this year.
Okay.
I remember because I remember Rex Grossman just having a day, like a Drew Brees-type day. The Giants peaked. Mark Cuban said yesterday that good teams make the playoffs. Hot teams win championships. Giants were a hot team. And we saw it from the do-or-die game against the Cowboys on the last night of the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true in all sports, especially, I would say, in the NHL, when you ride a hot goaltender or a hot team, usually they can get through that 6 years of playoffs that they have every year. And you just got to go with the flow. And usually it is the hot team that wins, especially when it's a long stretch. I don't know whether that really, really counts in a one-game championship, but I guess it does.
Well, it's the road to the championship as well.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there are two playoff games that you have to play beforehand. So,
what'd you think of Madonna?
Oh, that was...
Really? Wow, that's very eloquent of you.
It was the epitome of lame, my friend. It's just, I hate Super Bowl halftime shows. They're stupid. And she's got all these people out there, and CeeLo Green is dressed like a clown, and it was just awful.
When it started, all I could feel like, I felt like Ben Gazzara was watching over everything. It felt like I was back at Jackie Treehorn's house. it was, I mean... Everything about it was the start of Gutter Balls. Oh. When Kenny Rogers plays just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Right.
The Big Lebowski always had a big hold on me. And, of course, Ben Gazzara passing away last week. He was Jackie Treehorn. I'm telling you, Jay, it started and it looked exactly like Gutter Balls. I thought Julianne Moore was going to come out with the bowling ball. And I thought, well, you know what I thought.
Mr. Treehorn tells us that he had to eject you from his garden party. That you were drunk and abusive.
Mr. Treehorn treats objects like women, man.
Mr. Treehorn draws a lot of water in this town.
And so does Madonna in whatever town she's in. She's going to be doing a free show on the Plains of Abraham this summer.
Just a bad, second-rate Vegas Cirque du Soleil. That's all
well,
that was.
It was. Well, I wouldn't call it second-rate. I thought the production was really trippy.
Yeah, trippy, flashy costumes.
The Charlie Kaufman imitator on the tightrope during music really made me laugh.
It made me pain. it made me cringe in pain. I said, "Wow."
You know, it was a Montreal company that did the stage and the lighting and the production.
Clearly,
for it.
Clearly, there's a Cirque du Soleil coming in.
They're called, I believe, they're called Moment Factory.
Okay,
and yes, they are associated with Cirque du Soleil.
Okay.
And I don't think there was any surprise from that show last night that it was...
They manufacture moments.
It was nice for the good people of Indianapolis to see a little bit of Quebecois flash and dash and culture in that.
Right.
I can tell that you didn't like it.
It was terrible. Come on. What do you got to bring out all these guys? Like, if CeeLo Green had any street credit before this, I guarantee you it is gone right now, my friend.
We had MIA performing with Madonna... LMFAO was terrible. That was
what do you need
terrifying.
These people for? You're Madonna, for God's sake.
MIA gave the finger to the crowd and they blurted out. I'll tell you, Jay, I watched the whole thing. I didn't even notice it. Good Bronfman girl, you know, eh?
Yeah.
She's married to a Bronfman.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
She's married to Edgar Bronfman's son.
Okay.
So
they must be very proud.
Well, I would imagine so.
Okay.
This is it's called Bad Girls, I think, the new single. Crazy music video. Check it out, people. Absolutely nuts music video. If that was really filmed in Saudi Arabia, she's in trouble.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, huh?
Looks like a second-rate cartoon. Not cartoon, cartoon.
Yes. I think we all caught the nuance.
A movie also called How to Kill a Horse. That's what that was called.
Jimmy, can we take a break? We'll be right back on The Kaufman Show.
Johnny wishes he was famous. Spends his time alone in the basement with a Lennon and Cobain and a guitar and a stereo. Well, he wishes he could escape this, but it all seems so contagious not to be yourself and faceless in a song that has no soul. I remember feeling low and I remember losing hope.
Welcome back to The Kaufman Show. That's right. We've got Jeremy Taggart on in about a little less than an hour, playing the drums on that very song.
That song gives me goosebumps, and everybody's going to find out why in a little less than an hour.
Those that don't remember will be reminded.
Yes, they will.
That's for damn sure. I'd be willing to say that song has been played more on these call letters than just about any in the last 10 years.
I wouldn't be surprised. I love it. It gives me goosebumps, and you'll know why.
Have you read Dave Stubbs tonight?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance.
Well, go check it out on the next commercial break.
I will. I don't read that fast, Kaufman.
You can read it over the next several commercial breaks, then.
Oh, it will take several.
Dave Stubbs, Habs Inside Out on Twitter, just wrote a fantastic article on Scott Gomez. And anybody who's seen my Twitter feed lately knows that this is an issue that's very close to my heart. I was at the game on Saturday, Jay, and was so impressed by the applause and the encouragement that Scott Gomez was getting. And I was fully on board. I was cheering my lungs out every time he got the puck. And then intermission happened. And I walked around, and I saw that everybody was mocking him.
There you go.
And that people had birthday hats on and streamers and... I felt
so
sick.
Awful.
I'm sorry
I'm laughing, but it's so awful.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Now, Gomez, wow, is he classy. He says everything right. He says that he loves Montreal, that nobody's ever said anything to his face amongst the fans. The players rib him, but hey, they're teammates, and that's what it's all about.
Right.
Scott Gomez is a class act, and we're lucky to have him in this town. 514-790-0990.
And cue the callers.
Just to let you know, the call of the night tonight on the Kaufman Show will get a Sherwood Nexon 12 hockey stick, retail value $190.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you to the fine people at Sherwood out in Sherbrooke, Quebec.
We'll have to judge it at the end of the show, I guess?
We will judge it at the end of the show.
Best caller.
Best call of the night.
I think we'll get some interesting calls.
I would imagine. If you want to call long distance, we can ship the stick. 1-866-896-2546.
I could have used that stick on the weekend.
Yeah, you played a little hockey this weekend.
I played in the Lachine International Pond Hockey Tournament. A little hockey. I played 3 games in 1 day. You know, after working at the pub the night before and getting 2 hours of sleep. Went over down, and it was a beautiful day for hockey. It was -4, sunny.
Oh, well, at least
the ice
freeze.
Was great. No, it was fantastic. I had a great time, and I'd like to thank all those who were involved.
And I know you had Chris Nyland was one of your big supporters, right?
He was. He couldn't make it out there because he does have his show during the day. But
that's right. Saturday afternoons with Simon Salikas.
Yeah, his agent James was down there, and he was on our team, the McLean's Pub Hooligans, and we were awful. We lost all 3 games, but I did score a couple in the second game.
Well, considering you haven't played hockey since...
Since 2004, I believe.
I think...
Yeah, and I never played hockey before that. I always played baseball and football, and it was embarrassing. I was a 5-year-old kid out there, ankles all taped up. It was just awful, man.
Can you skate?
Barely.
Okay.
I'm not a good skater at all because I'm flat-footed, but if you want to take a look at it, there is...
No, there's proof?
There's some proof on YouTube
now.
Oh,
I'm so going to do
that. Just type in McLean's Pub Hooligans, and I'm the guy falling all over the place.
Back to Gomez in a second.
Yeah.
And we will be joined by Richard Burnett in about 10 minutes, but... Did you see the video that Habs Lucky Charm put up for us on YouTube?
I did. I must say, it was a little bit touched.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Yeah, George, that was really nice.
One of our regulars here on the show. One of my favorite people to call. And and there's another one on hold. George, you put up a video, and we're just touched. It was really cool of you. If you type in the Kaufman Show 990 or Montreal on YouTube, you'll find it.
You'll find it, yeah.
It's done to the tune of No Champagne Socialist by the Arkells. And cheers, George. Really warms
well
my heart to know how awesome our listeners are. And, we saw it last week, and we saw it the week before with the Carter tribute. They're everywhere. They are west and east and south and north, and it's just a pleasure to have this opportunity to talk to you all, and thank you all for continuing to come back. Now, all right, let's go to the phones because we've got a few minutes right now. Oh, Louis from Ville Mercier, I went looking for you this weekend, and the girl that was manning your section was so cute that I went back 3 times to ask where you were.
Was sick. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
I'm wonderful, Louis. Welcome back to the program. It's been forever.
I forgot the name of your buddy with you.
That is Jay Ferrar.
Hi, Jay. Jay's in New York, too. Great team. Keep
Thank
up
you.
The good work.
We
so
sure
what
will.
Is, So I have to do a big comment. So what is the topic? You want me to discuss football, baseball, hockey, Super Bowl?
Louis, you talk about whatever your heart desires.
Because you just talked about Scott Gomez. You know what? He doesn't have the Montreal Canadiens record for most consecutive games. I think he's got, what, 58, 59? The record, I think it's Donald Brashear, 95 straight games for the Habs with no score, with no goals. And the second one, I think it's George Arak with 65. So he's not... So far, so good.
But Louis, that to me is a useless stat.
No.
Because
I
really think that the Montreal Canadiens play better hockey when Scott Gomez is in the lineup. Well, and it doesn't matter if he scores or not. I understand that Glenn Sather massively overpaid him for a contract.
Yeah, I know.
But you know what? That's not Scott Gomez's fault.
No.
And if somebody wanted to offer me that to do for whatever, it's none of our business.
No,
I understand
the
money could be better spent somewhere else, but when the trade was made,
I know.
You know, Ryan McDonough was not Ryan McDonough when the trade was made.
Yeah, but if you look at the trade so far, I don't know if it's killing us, but I think McDonough maybe not going to be, he won't be a Bobby Orr, but I was just joking about Scott. One thing's going to happen this summer, I think they're going to buy him off, or are they going to find somebody come February 27th? I don't think so.
Hey,
I think
you're gonna Louis, buy him off. You remember how Carl Dyke has finished his career, right?
I know.
He made a lot of money playing in Hamilton.
Well, you know, you're right. Maybe they're going to have to do that. And the same thing, the next season come, what are they going to do with Caberly? And he got two more years, 4.2. And you look at Caberly, I think his career going downhill. A lot of big decision who's going to be the next GM? Well, Gauthier's going to finish the season, but next year, nobody knows. I hope it's going to be Pierre McGuire. I think if there's one guy who deserves to be, and I think on Lance Champ last week, François Gagnon mentioned that Pierre McGuire and Jeff Molson, I don't know if they're a big buddy, but he said in French, he said they have, ils ont des liens étroits. I mean, so they know each other well. So if it's Pierre McGuire, I hope this guy's know he's doing a great job for TSN the last 25 years. I don't know. Would you agree with Pierre McGuire as the next GM, guys?
I like him.
I think so. I
like him, and I understand it's today.
He's a Montreal guy.
Oh, absolutely. He's an LCC boy. And it's funny, he just moved. He just moved because he just got a job with NBC Sports in Connecticut.
Did he sign a 5-year contract? I know he signed a big year. If I'm him.
I'm sure that there's a stipulation in the clause that will allow him to get out for
there's
an NHL
be.
Job.
There's got to be. And you know what? He does deserve it. And if anything, it's going to be interesting. I would love to see Pierre McGuire at the helm. It would be so interesting to see exactly how he goes about it, because it doesn't happen very often where you got a guy who's predominantly known for his analyst skills on major networks to go and be a GM. I mean, we've seen Mike Keenan. We've seen some other guys go in and out from TV work into the GM post. But, you know, it's interesting.
We all, here I think at this station especially, people are very partial to Pierre. Because there's a familiarity to it. I like him. I'll tell you, I've sat in studio with him. I have never met somebody as passionate before, ever, about any sport, really almost about anything. Thing is, he needs the opportunity to do, to plan, to build. Does that really happen in this town?
No, it doesn't.
So that's something worth thinking about. This is The Kaufman Show. And we'll be back right after the break with Richard Burnett.
My piss hardly makes the stall, and this time it's not an act.
This is The Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back.
Till the rain not to dry.
That might be my favorite Madonna song.
Is it?
I can't think of another that
I was
like.
Like a Prayer. I thought it was.
It's a good song.
It's
a good
song.
It's a great video.
For Madonna.
It was, you know, it was. I didn't expect her to end on anything else last night. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
The CeeLo, but
I thought he was going to fall down.
The CeeLo was just an ad for the show that was on after the Super Bowl.
Well, exactly, and I don't know why she needs that kind of. Well, I call it. I guess you can call it star power, but I mean, she doesn't need it. So next time, Madonna, just do it alone. You're all right. You're one of the biggest pop stars of all time, if not the biggest.
I saw something last week on TV, and it really stuck with me. I think it was Tuesday night on Strombo, and I'm going to play it now.
You know what's meaningless? All hockey games are meaningless. The All-Star game is no more relevant to culture than the Stanley Cup Finals. We just apply. That's the whole point of sports, being passionate about something that doesn't matter. That's the whole idea. You're like, oh, the All-Star game doesn't mean. No game means anything. It's a game. But where it does matter is when that athlete or the organization can step into the community and be bigger than the game. Be part of what changes culture. And that is exactly what's going on with Brian Burke right now. Sports is, in no uncertain terms, homophobic. Hockey dressing rooms, homophobic in the NHL. Brian Burke is really leading the charge in dealing with that.
And he really is. And Strombo sat down with Brian Burke last week. We're going to play a couple of clips from it. Talking about his son, yesterday was the 2-year anniversary of the death of Brendan Burke in a car accident. Brendan was openly gay. His family approved and accepted him for who he was. And since his passing, Brian Burke has taken on a lot larger of a role as an advocate for gay rights. And he says that the time is nigh for a National Hockey Leaguer to come out of the closet. Now, we're going to bring in our next guest. His name is Richard Burnett. He's a writer, editor, journalist, and columnist. He's also a hell of an activist. We've all been reading $3 Bill forever. It was in the hour for as long as there was an hour. But now you can find it online. Richard Burnett, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Hey, thanks, man.
How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I just got to say the ratings for the Super Bowl went up during Madonna's 10-minute thing there. I think a lot of gay fans tuned in because they gave it higher ratings than the actual game itself.
Are you saying that the gay fans weren't watching the Super Bowl?
I think they were, but a lot more of them tuned in for the halftime show.
Well, she's a gay icon, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that maybe the NFL was skewing it that way.
No, but the NFL is still got a long way to go, just like all the other major league pro leagues, man.
Well, if anything, the NFL has, I mean, I was reading on your blog today that you have interviewed the three NFL players who have come out of the closet.
Yeah.
Now, I would imagine that that's three more than most sports, right, in North America?
Well, you know, there are just 6 gay male athletes from North America's 4 major pro leagues who have probably come out. And of those 6, I've interviewed 4 of them. NFL offensive lineman Roy Simmons, former Green Bay Packer and Atlanta Falcon Esera Tuelo, Major League Baseball utility player Billy Bean, and of course NFL running back David Cope, who came out like back in 1975. That was like the Jurassic era for sports when it came to gay people, man.
Was he blackballed when it happened?
Well, he was not really blackballed. He was out of the game by that point. He wrote a biography that went to the top of the New York Times. And then he went on to open up a linoleum store in L.A., which he continues to run. It's a family business. Had it been 20 or 30 years later, I think he would have become a national hero and a role model for a lot of young people and an example for all the rest of gay athletes and leagues to say, well, listen, this is cool, and this guy is a hero.
Richard, bear with me for a second. We're going to play a clip from Brian Burke from the Strombo Show last week.
Watching the acceptance that my son got when he came out in the hockey community at Miami University. This athlete that has the courage to come out is going to find that that hill is a lot less steep than he thinks it is, that there's a lot of support. I know the players on our team have all spoken to me about it and said, absolutely, a gay player is welcome here. The best thing about my son coming out was I didn't have to take anything back. And that's what I tell parents is, there is a chance. You know, you talk to statisticians. 10%, 15%, whatever it is, people who are born gay, and there's a chance that your child's going to be gay. So in our house, everything was about acceptance. No racial humor tolerated, no jokes about gay people, No jokes about handicapped people. It was all, everyone is worth your time. Everyone has dignity. Everyone deserves your respect. And so when my son said, Dad, I'm gay, the best thing was, I said, do I don't have to take anything back? I don't have to apologize for anything. I don't have to rebuild any bridge. And that's what I tell parents. And to the kids who are battling with coming out, it does get better. There is a support group, and you're entitled to live your life. So if that's what you need to do, that push, then there are people that care about you.
Amazing to hear those comments, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, Mr. Burke is absolutely incredible. I mean, not only did he march in the Toronto Gay Pride Parade with his son, I believe, in 2009, but he, after his son passed, he participated in the 2010 and 2011 Toronto Gay Pride Parades. I think that even is such a tribute to his son's legacy. But I think also his son passing was coming out, but also passing was a bit of a catalyst to help Mr. Burke kind of lead this charge. And it's so good to hear him speak those positive words.
It absolutely was the catalyst, Richard. I don't think that I knew anything about Brian Burke being pro-gay rights before. It just wasn't on the radar.
In fact, I was surprised to hear him come out as a pro-gay person. I mean, I just assumed that, you know, all of these people were blockheads and, you know, not very gay supportive. And to hear this guy, this rough and tumble, you know, hockey coach, general manager, come out and support gay rights, I was like, wow, this is incredible. It really, to hear something like that come from out of the blue from somebody that you really don't expect to hear it from. And maybe, you know, clearly, obviously, I was not giving him the credit he was due. But, I mean, just to hear those words come from his mouth, I think meant a lot to a lot of people.
We're in conversation with journalist and gay activist Richard Burnett on The Kaufman Show. Richard, I've noticed that you're a big Jackie Robinson fan. I was wondering, and really, I make an assumption when I look at it, that that's what you're looking for out of a professional athlete. You want to see another Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, you know, there are only a handful of athletes who are bigger than their sports, and I'm thinking of the legends like Rocket Richard and Jackie Robinson, Billie Jean King, Muhammad Ali. Jackie Robinson, I mean, it would be ideally what we need is a gay Jackie Robinson to come out. I mean, the crap that athlete's going to have to take, I think, at the beginning is going to be awful. I mean, but coming out at the height of a player's career is what we need. And right now, like, you know, the Rangers and Islanders have had to warn fans against chanting homophobic slurs at games in New York. Athletes are still cussing each other out or insulting referees by using the F word. Being gay is still not acceptable to many football fans across Europe and South America. But and on the flip side, gay athletes, are more interested in signing big contracts and multimillion-dollar sponsorships than coming out. And it kind of makes me think of Martina Navratilova, because she proved it is possible for gay athletes to hold a high visible place in sports. But unfortunately for her, she came out in an era where she had to pay a price. When she came to Montreal in 2006 for the Out Games, we sat down and she told me that staying in the closet would have cost her personal dignity. And she said, you can't put a dollar value on dignity. So I think today now we're only 5 years later after that. I mean, we're inching closer to a new day, I think. I actually believe the first major league male athlete to come out today, tomorrow, whenever, will be bigger than any other sports star on the planet right now, because he will win the hearts of an entire minority, as well as their friends and families. And I think there's a lot of sponsorship money to be made by playing that gay card.
Thank
today.
You. I've been wondering about that from the get-go. I mean, airlines advertise to gay people.
Yeah.
There are a lot of businesses out there that advertise especially to the gay community because they are the ones with disposable income.
That's right.
Now, why is it? Is it fear? Is it fear of rejection from teammates? Honestly, I don't get it, and I don't feel comfortable saying with the same authority as you, Richard, that somebody should come out. I don't have the qualifications to make that. And I know that you have outed a couple of people. I know that you outed Andre Boisclair, you outed Ricky Martin, which I kind of think is funny because I think everybody knew that Ricky Martin was gay.
Yeah.
But would you feel comfortable if you were to be given information that a professional athlete was homosexual? Would you run with it?
Not really. You know, in the case of Ricky Martin and the case of Andre Boisclair, they had done and said things that I thought were hypocritical when it came vis-a-vis gay civil rights, and I thought it was best to out them, to show up their hypocrisy. I think to out somebody just for the sake of outing them, I think is not conducive to helping the process, and it's to drag, you know, Coming out is the most liberating thing a gay person can do. It's something that straight people really don't know.
No, we can't comprehend. I can't comprehend it.
But it is such a huge moment of liberation that why would I want to steal that moment from somebody? I think people need to come out on their own at the proper time in their lives. However, you know, I'm going to do my best to kind of nudge the conversation forward and, you know, encourage them. But somebody's going to have to, you know, at some point you got to have guts and you got to stand up and go, yeah, man, this is the right thing to do. Everybody who has come out that I've talked to, celebrities, athletes, or whatever it is, after the fact always say, you know, it was the best thing I did. They were scared before, but afterwards they always say, to a T, I swear to God, except for maybe with the exception of Rupert Everett, who's still miserable that he's not making enough money. But everybody else is saying, you know, it's the best thing I ever did.
We are just finishing up with Richard Burnett. Jay, do you have a question?
Yeah, Richard, we heard Brian Burke talk a little bit before about how talking to his team, nobody would have a problem, or none of the players would have a problem with that. Well, a few years back, I remember, I think it was around the time that Billy Beane came out, numerous athletes were interviewed about how they felt about it. Most of them said, sure, you know, I have no problem with a teammate being gay, but you heard garbage like, as long as he doesn't look at me in the shower,
right,
and things like that. Are athletes, I mean, this is just a few years back now, really ready?
I think most players are more ready than we give them credit for. Glenn Burke, who is one of the gay athletes that came out. In fact, actually, he came out during his career. This is an incredible story. I mean, this is a guy that's credited with inventing the high five. But he was playing with the LA Dodgers, and he was traded to the Oakland A's First of all, Al Campanis, Dodgers general manager back then, Al Campanis, offered Glenn Burke $75,000 to get married to a woman, and Burke flat out refused.
Campanis was the same guy that said that that black people have
they don't have the brain skill in order to manage teams.
Phrenology 101.
Yeah. And so Burke was traded after he refused to end his friendship with Spike Lasorda, the gay son of then Dodgers skipper Tommy Lasorda. Tommy Lasorda is in denial about his gay son and who passed away from AIDS. Anyway, Burke was then traded to Oakland, and it basically killed his career, which I think is ironic because Tommy Lasorda talks about, you know, playing baseball with the Montreal Royals with Jackie Robinson, and he turns around and does something despicable like this. But anyway, Glenn Burke passed away from AIDS in 1995, and one of his best friends is this filmmaker called Doug Harris, who last year released a documentary called Out about Glenn Burke. And Doug Harris said, and I quote, "The players had no problem with it. They loved him as a person despite his sexual orientation. He was a part of the team. They were upset, sad, pissed off when he was traded. That was the beginning of the end of his career. The players didn't have a problem with it. The bottom line is what it boils down to."
Do you think that Montreal is a good city for a player to come out in?
You know, I once asked Felipe Alou how he would treat or how he would if being gay would affect the player's evaluation. And he turned to me, he wasn't really happy with the question, but he gave me a great answer. He said, you know, there are a lot of killings in this world. There are a lot of lies and stuff like that. He said, why would a player being gay affect his evaluation? He said, as far as he was concerned, whether a player was gay or straight, made absolutely no difference to the game. What you do on the field between the white lines is all you got to do is just play baseball.
Richard, I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. That's really it. It's about the game, and it's amazing. You know, we played a clip right before you came on about how individual games don't matter.
Yeah.
And really, it's about the opportunity to affect social change.
Yeah.
And when Martina Navratilova came out, it was something. But golf, tennis, they don't mean the same. They don't pull the same weight.
Yeah. No, we need one of the four major league leagues in North America. And sad to say, but it's going to have to be a guy.
Yeah,
you know?
It's going to have 100%.
To be. This is what, I mean, you know, homophobia is not about lesbians. Homophobia is about guys in the locker room together. It's a guy problem. It's a straight guy problem. And it's going to happen because, all of us were saying, there's a lot of sponsorship money to be made by playing the gay card today. And not only that, but whichever athlete does it first, I swear they are going to become a hero for an entire generation, not just gay kids, but a lot of people like you and me, who, you know, we just want somebody to come out and be on our box of Special K, looking at us in the morning, going, "Yeah, man, it's cool to be gay."
And you know what, Richard? It's about damn time.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what else to say other than that. It's about damn time.
Yeah.
And the longer that it goes, I think the harder it's going to get.
Yeah. Well, you know, segments like this one on your show help make a difference. You know, a little bit, inch by inch, day by day.
Good. We'll keep at it as long as you keep fighting the good fight, too.
Yeah, man.
Richard Burnett, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me on the show. Good night.
Good night. How about that?
There you go.
Yeah. Very happy that we spoke with him.
Yeah. Great interview. I couldn't agree more with what he said. He had some interesting little anecdotes there, too.
Yeah, a couple in there.
I've learned a couple of things tonight. Interesting.
Well, I learned that just because he's known as the guy who outed Andre Boisclair or Ricky Martin, there's a method to the madness. I don't necessarily agree with it. If I was in the same position, I would not do it. But I get where he's coming from.
Right. There's a bigger picture.
The idea of a straight journalist outing a gay anything is beyond my comprehension.
No. I mean, so, in his point of view, there's obviously a bigger picture to this. The individual, I mean, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one. And he's doing something for his cause. And if there's going to have to be a sacrifice on the way, it's going to have to be a sacrifice on the way. He believes in the issue, and I support him for it.
It's funny what he was saying with Felipe. Obviously, I was thinking about hockey because, you know, it's been a little while since there was baseball in this town.
Right.
But, you know, even I don't think it would be a big deal. I don't think it would resonate if an Alouette came out of the closet. I think it has to be a Montreal Canadian.
It does.
A Toronto Maple Leaf, a New York Yankee, someone that can make a difference. And you know, obviously the John Rockers are slowly slipping out of vision.
Hopefully. And it's going to have to be, you know, somebody with some kind of star power. I mean, Billy Beane is Billy Beane, but
no,
you know,
it's not Billy Beane, Moneyball Billy Beane.
No,
it's
I know that
Billy Beane.
No, I know that.
Yeah.
Billy Beane was, you know, he's not a Hall of Famer.
No.
He never dominated the game. It's got to be a guy who's a superstar, a legitimately good player, an all-star. He comes out there, he says what he's got to say, things are going
to
change.
I'll tell you what absolutely stank that I wanted to talk to Richard about was, you remember Mike Piazza's press conference, his I'm not gay press conference?
Yeah.
What an opportunity missed there. And not to say that he is gay. I mean,
no, we don't
the
know.
Press conference was literally, I'm not gay and here's my Playboy model wife. But what an opportunity that he had to initiate a conversation and to change the way. And this is already, oh God, it's got to be 10 years ago or around then. I mean, it was when Mike Piazza was relevant.
It's when he was dominating the game and he was probably the best catcher in the game
exactly.
At the time. Was he still with the Dodgers at the time?
No, he was a Met.
He was a Met.
Yeah.
So he had probably just gone over to the Mets. And, well, you know how the media is in New York. So they probably propagated that
a little
bit.
And again, not knowing, and like I said before, I don't feel comfortable having, you know, and saying, well, if you are in the closet, you should come out. Who the hell am I to say that?
Right.
But New York City is a very liberal town. It would probably be the most liberal town in America.
Yeah, except for the New York Post, but anyway.
Well, no, but I meant the city itself.
The city itself, okay.
And the people in the city.
Absolutely.
The tolerance for gays in New York City is more. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in Chelsea in New York, and when I was walking down the street with a woman, I was in the minority. I remember being there one weekend when Sex and the City movie opened, and it was guys lined up around the block.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, why not?
So Mike Piazza would have been a hero in Chelsea. And not if, even if he hadn't come out, but instead of categorically denying the way that Rafael Palmeiro denied doing steroids in front of Congress.
Yeah, I am not gay.
Right.
I am not gay. Just say that and then get off the mic. So, if you really, I mean, you don't.
Foolish opportunity wasted.
Yeah.
Opportunity wasted. And here we are. And again, I don't remember exactly when it happened, but let's call it 10 years later. And we're still waiting.
We're still waiting. And you talked about Montreal. And I think that kind of an event would go over very well in this city.
Me too.
I don't think we'd have a problem with it at all. You know, I've got a bit of a feel on the street there. And most people are extremely tolerant and in this city. hockey fans, jocks alike. I mean, it's a different kind of feel here. And we do have a large gay community, of course, one of the largest in North America.
Absolutely. And I think that if there is a homosexual playing on the Montreal Canadiens right now, this is the year and this is the time, because there have been so many stories all year long, so many controversies, so many things. This would be a wonderfully positive story for the hockey team.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a story.
Burke talks about the stats and the odds, right? 10-15%. What does that mean? There's 2.5 gay hockey players on every club?
It's got to be. Can we get the calculations for that? I'd like to see the actual calculation.
Well, it's
10-15% of the population,
right,
is homosexual.
So if we
is a known fact,
right? So if we lowball it and say it's 10%, and there's 25 or 23 guys on the team, then there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Just odds, right?
Right.
The same odds that paid out 30-1 on the safety being the first score of the game yesterday. It's just odds.
I wonder who cashed in on that.
Not me.
Okay.
And you talk about odds and you talk about it's time. It's just time. And I don't know how to put it any more eloquently than that, but it's weird that we live in a society where this isn't okay.
Well, that, you know, Mario Cuomo said about Jackie Robinson being the first black player in professional baseball. He said, too late. It was too late.
Yeah.
It was 1947.
Right.
It wasn't 1847. It was 1947. And if someone were to come out, I mean, I still believe it would be too late. But that's just me. I'm a little bit, you know, left-leaning in that area. It's got to happen. It's got to happen at a time where there's still a lot of people that are against it, in order for people to change their views and to change their taboos, their social taboos about this issue.
I sat at a bar, not yours, on Friday night, Jay.
Oh, thanks.
Trust me, you'll be happy it wasn't when I finished the story.
Okay.
And somebody, there were a few journalists sitting there at the bar, and, you know, they don't know who I am yet, but...
Yet.
And, my ears perked up. I heard them talking about a former expo, and one of the guys said, yeah, that guy was a fag.
Mm-hmm.
Hope I'm allowed to say that in that context. It's not.
It's in context.
Exactly.
It's in context. So that
I've
got no issue with that.
I hope everybody realizes that. I stood up and looked at the guy and was like, are you serious? Because really, it could have been said, like, player X was gay and should have come out. But for it to be said with that kind of vitriol and that kind of level of volume, where I wasn't the only one who heard it, maybe I'm the only one that recognized the name. But we're still a ways away. And it sucks. And maybe we're a ways away because it hasn't happened. And once it happens, we're not a ways away anymore. Sort of like a black president.
Do you know I would have kicked that guy out of my bar?
For sure.
I would have kicked. It's the same as the N-word for me. It's the same as anything else.
I have seen you kick people out for less.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a guy who doesn't believe in censorship. I believe that all words are good. All words should be used, but in context. You want to say the word fag, you have to say it in context, whether you're relating to a story or an issue, but never, ever, ever used to hurt someone.
Thank you so much to Richard Burnett, $3 bill, for joining us. We will definitely have him on again. This is The Kaufman Show. Sam Roberts is in town this Friday.
Well, isn't he always in town?
Well, he's playing at Metropolis.
Ah.
Let's go out on some Sam.
Sure.
Shut up. I love this song.
Ooh, yeah.
Shut up, Lou.
I wanna jam it with you.
I'm jamming. Jamming. And I hope you like jamming, too.
Yeah.
And welcome back to the Kaufman Show. I love it.
Ridiculous.
Happy birthday to Bob Marley.
Is it his birthday today?
Well, 5 minutes ago.
Okay.
We're going to pretend that today is still yesterday.
Okay, so it's Bob Marley's birthday.
Yeah.
One of the greatest musicians of all time.
Right.
And that's the rendition that you play. Well, I don't know. I don't know if rolling in his grave is an understatement at this point.
Excuse me, but I have nothing but reverence and love for The Simpsons.
Okay.
So to me, this is almost the highest of compliments.
Okay.
You know,
all right.
It's also Gord Downie's birthday.
Okay.
Which we'll be playing.
Is there
some...
a Simpsons version of Boots and Hearts or something?
No. We will, funnily enough, we will play a little Boots or Hearts later. In honor of Mr. Jim Bryson, who had a big day for himself today. Jim Bryson had a kid. Congratulations, Mazel Tov, to the Brysons.
Mazel Tov.
That's right.
Okay.
I've got to throw in a little bit here. I'm surrounded by Greeks.
By Greeks.
Greeks,
yeah.
To the left of me. Greeks to the right.
it's like you're working in a kitchen at Belle Province or something.
Well, yeah. I would not have said that.
I can say that.
Okay, right.
I can say that. Again, I can't tell somebody to come out, but I know my people very well.
This is the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy Garufalis on the board, John Kakulakis helping us out.
We're everywhere. He's on the fryer, by the way.
In about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace. I'm very excited. Have you seen this guy tweet?
I've started to, yeah.
He's a sports nut. You can follow him, Taggart07 on Twitter. TAGGART. And sat courtside at the Raptors game last week, live tweeted all through the Super Bowl. Guy knows his stuff, and there's a certain edginess to it. I'm really looking forward to speaking with him. I see we have our old friend, John, on the phone. John, all the way in Denver, Colorado, checking in with us like he does every single week. 514-790-0990. John, you want the hockey stick, don't you?
I want any hockey stick. But first of all, I just want to remind you all, it's all okay in context.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
First of all, I'd like to wish you all a very happy anniversary up there.
John, I will cut you off right now. I like you. I think you're really smart. Last week, your call was brilliant.
Yeah, I was kind of proud of that one.
So let's keep it to that level, man. You have no idea how much anger I feel from that. Go on to my Facebook page, to the Kaufman Show Facebook page, and all of you out there, you can go and click like, because I have a feeling that the numbers on that page are not reflective of the amount of people that actually care about this show. But on that is an article from Cam Charron, Charron. You can follow him on Twitter also. He writes for The Score. And I'll tell you, I believe every word of that article. I think it is fantastic. He defends Scott Gomez and says that the Montreal Canadiens are a much better team with Scott Gomez in the lineup. I don't care that he's not scoring, John. I also don't care how much money he makes. If anything, he pays more taxes here and allows me to go to a doctor for free.
And I was also joking. It's a funny anniversary. I have no animosity towards that guy. We beat him fair and square in 2001 in the Stanley Cup Finals, so I'm all golden with that.
John, I know that you were wondering. I screwed up before. It's Taggart7. There's no zero in it. It's just Taggart7.
Seven. Yeah, I've seen you retweet him. Funny guy.
He is. So other than your wishing me of a happy birthday, which of course was for Gord Downie and Bob Marley.
And, the thing that might get me banned.
Right, so let's stay off that. And if you have a point, because right now you're not looking good for
I'm
that hockey stick.
I might go through the pond ice, huh? All right, let's see. So that's Super Bowl. All my stuff was built on that Scott Gomez stuff.
Well, you know, we don't have time for that garbage here, John. I got to tell you, man. You know what?
There, right.
But he has an opinion. He can state his opinion.
I have no problem with your opinion, but the opinion, if the opinion is happy birthday, Scott Gomez, you've gone 59 games without a goal, then frankly, John, you're better than that.
I am, but there's times I really don't want to be. How about that Super Bowl?
How about that Super Bowl? Wow.
No, I have a friend on the Patriots, so that's what kind of sucked.
Who's your friend?
Nate Solder, the rookie offensive lineman, whom through my friends up at CU.
Wow, you going to get him on the show for us?
Maybe.
All right.
I'll tell you what. I'll try to get him on the show for that hockey stick. Mm. You have a deal?
Wow.
Well, we can now say that you are so far the call of the night, John.
Yeah.
we'll just say
do
that
I have to
for
pay
now.
International shipping?
No, it's coming to you. It's coming straight from Sherwood's head office in Sherwood, Quebec. No, not to that you, but to whoever amazing. Wins.
Provided you win,
right,
of course.
Right.
Well, can we just play back that call I had last week? Because I think that might win.
That's funny.
This one's not going too well.
John, thank you for the call, and you are not the first person to have suggested that tonight. Oh, can you play my call from last week and have that count? No.
No. No.
But I do appreciate the effort. Once again, we have a Nexon 12 stick from Sherwood.
Nexon 12.
Yeah, the reviews
just
on this
sounds good, huh?
Honestly, Jay, you'd think that this was made for as Buster Bluth would say, made for Army.
Right.
Sniper super elite technology, one piece spear shaft construction with an enhanced low kick point, made with premium high modulus 3K carbon weave. What?
What was that?
I was
a technical babble there.
Exactly. I was saying the other day that I remember going to, you remember Doug Harvey Sports on Queen Mary?
Yes, I do.
That's where I bought my first hockey stick, and I had to save up forever to save $30 to buy that hockey stick.
And it was like a 45-pound wooden.
It was, God, was it?
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I do. I for some reason, I have like a Scandinavian city name in my head, like Oslo or something like that. Was there an Oslo stick?
There was a Jofa.
No, it wasn't a Jofa.
It could have been an Oslo.
Something like that.
I had to buy sticks every single year because when spring came, my grandfather used to go into the garage, take the stick out, break the blade off, and then use it for the tomato garden.
Well, that was back when the sticks were yeah. 10, 12
If anybody
bucks.
Else is Greek, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't think I think that goes across the immigrant community.
Yeah, probably.
I don't think that the community gardens just belong to you.
I remember my dad just looking at my papu just like break the blade off, and I'm looking at him like, what's he doing? My father would just say, just let it be. I'll get you a new one. Don't bother him.
Don't cross grandpa.
Yeah, unless you want the rest of that stick to go somewhere that you don't want it to.
What did you call your grandfather?
Papu.
Yeah, mine was Papa.
Papa.
Yeah.
It's not Zeta?
That's my dad's side. My mom's side was Papa.
Oh, okay.
So, like, oh, my Papa. To me, he was so wonderful.
Okay.
Hey, man, come on. That song, that's the end of Back to the Simpsons. That's Krusty meeting his dad for the and reuniting at the end of the show.
Okay. I think I missed that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, must
It's not
watch.
A Bob Marley rendition, is
no,
it?
No, it's a top five is what it is for me.
Okay.
We've got another call. We've got Rick in Ville-Saint-Laurent. Hello, Rick.
What's up, guys?
How are you, man?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Good, good. What's going on?
I think the hockey stick you were referring to was a Torspo.
Was a what?
Torspo?
Torspo.
I remember Torspo. It could be.
I really don't remember.
It's like the cheapest, most classic hockey stick ever.
Look, I remember it running me $30 at Doug Harvey Sports.
$30 back then.
Well, that's it.
Then it couldn't have been a Torspo.
$30 back then is probably like a $200 stick today.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're giving away today, but I think the retail value for this stick is $189.
So,
oh, my
God. What do we
got
to do to get it?
Pardon?
What do we got to do to get it?
Well, it's really not that simple. We're looking for a regular organic call that strikes us and makes us go, wow, that's a great call. And then Jimmy's going to put your name on a list, and then by the end of the show, we're going to decide who gets the stick.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, a little different, eh? And there's no trivia question. There's just amaze us with your intelligence.
You have to earn it.
That's right. That's right.
amaze you guys with my intelligence.
Yeah, feel free to call back if you need to think about it. We're going to go to break now anyway because we've got Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace coming up in a couple of minutes.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Rick. Boy, everybody's been throwing a curveball tonight, eh?
Yeah, I know. It seems that people are freezing up a little bit when they feel the pressure on how could I get that stick?
Do people not feel comfortable talking about gays in sports?
It's true, eh? We haven't gone. I would expect a little more calls. I'd love to hear what people have to say about that.
Let's
and we'll argue with you, too. It'll be good.
We like to argue.
We'd
on
like
the Kaufman
to argue.
Show.
Yeah.
Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace. They're in town April 2nd. Their new album drops April 3rd. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Let's keep it rolling, Jay.
What do we got?
You having fun?
Yes, I'm having a lot of fun, actually. Are you?
I'm always having fun. You know,
of course.
You know I love this
stuff,
man.
We got our own radio show, man. Come on, how could you not be having fun right now?
And people listen.
Yes, they do.
And it's awesome.
And we appreciate it.
We sure do. So let's bring in our next guest right now. They will be in town on April 3rd. Get your tickets, people. Sorry, April 2nd. April 3rd is when you buy the album. April 2nd is when you see the concert. Jeremy Taggart is with us. He is from Our Lady Peace. Welcome to the show.
Hello, fellas. How are you guys?
We're fantastic. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I got to ask you, Jeremy, you're doing a show the day before the album comes out, and this is something that's always bugged me, because you have the opportunity to do it the other way around, and then everybody knows the words to the songs.
Yeah, but think about the three or four shows before that and the three or four shows that are after that.
Oh, I don't. I just think about Montreal. Come on.
Yeah.
You know how we are out here. We're just thinking of ourselves.
I know, but you know what? I have a freaking suspicion that people probably have a chance to hear it before then with the internet these days.
Yeah, they say that you can do that nowadays. I know that Heavyweight, your first single, is on iTunes right now.
Yes.
So everybody can go and get that, and you've got to wait to hear the rest of Curve. But
I'm sure somebody will leak the damn thing at some point.
Well, people are industrious, are they not?
Well, the cool thing is it's not done yet, so that's kind of the best part. That's, you know, impossible to leak because it's not mixed yet. So there's still it's not really out. So that's cool.
Now, you've been in the band since you were 17, right?
Yes. Since 1993, since the beginning of the band, yeah.
So you've been famous longer than you haven't.
Well, I don't know about famous, but I've been in this band and in some sort of a semblance of a limelight for more than half of my life, yes.
What was it like to be 17 years old and be thrust into this?
I think because I always took it as a craft to drum and to play drums, I think by hiding behind that the whole time, and still to this day, it kind of I view it as a trade. So it kind of makes me feel like I have a normal job, and it keeps me away from the actual whole rock star stigma, you know.
I compare it to a professional athlete, and I mean, if there's anybody in my opinion that knows what someone like Brett Laurie is going through right now, I think it would be you, because you were young, and I imagine that people were throwing themselves at you, whichever way you want to put that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's odd when you're a kid. You know, I was basically in high school, you know, 17, and then just thrown on tour for sure. And we did have a lot of success early. But like I said, I think because I was doing still what I want to do, and I think also with a lot of athletes, that because they're kind of in this eye of a hurricane, and that being them doing what they do best and performing, you know, and I think by hiding in that little space, that you kind of don't really get the perspective of what the all that other stuff is, which in the big picture is nothing, to be honest. I mean, if you don't perform, then nobody's going to care anyway. So in terms of adulation and all that, that's already usually after the fact. So you're kind of thinking about the next thing, you know.
You're a big sports guy, aren't you?
Absolutely. I grew up playing baseball very seriously with the Ontario Baseball Association and a lot of rep teams, and kind of took it as my main source of what I was going to do as a kid from like 4 years old till 16. And once I started drumming at 14, I got to that age of rebellion at 15. And then my rebellion was against kind of sport, the sport of baseball, because at that point I'd grown sick of the politics of being a kid in sports, you know, the traveling and, you know, the hierarchy that happens with parents and all this, the stigma of not, you know, getting able to play at certain things. And, you know, it's a bit taxing, and I just was getting into drums, and I figured that was easier because it's just kind of, you call your own shots, you know.
Now, when you first joined the band, that was coinciding with when the Jays had their run.
Yeah, it was. It was 93. So it was, but again, that was my kind of rebellion towards the my only thing, which was baseball and pitching and practicing with my dad every day. And he was really upset that I stopped playing baseball and got serious with drums. And I think that there was an element when even when the Jays won those two world championships, I honestly felt like I wasn't into it.
Wow.
You know, it was odd. So it's kind of weird.
Any regrets on that now after
19
years?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, for sure. Like now, you know, when it was happening, I was like, yeah, big deal. You know, who cares? And then I'm looking back and I'm like, oh my God, they won it twice in a row. And I, you know, when everybody didn't want it to happen, you know. So, I mean, the fact that they're such a good team right now, and they're young and fast, and they have all the elements of that team at that time. You know, they weren't the Yankees. They weren't at that time. They weren't a contender. They were sure they were close, and they had a lot of teams, players on the team. But like, I think the Jays now, they have that opportunity to be like how the Rays are. You know, there's a chance. They could be in the next 2 to 3 years, I
for
think.
Sure. The only difference, Jeremy, is that they have the money of Rogers to back
yeah.
them, and Tampa didn't
yeah.
have that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the ownership is starting to realize that if they want to play in the game, you actually have to throw down, and they're you're starting to see that. And I think the fact that they're not necessarily concentrating on trying to sell out every game, they're realizing where they're at. And, you know, the influx of cash in Major League Baseball, I think it's kind of like horse racing. You know, there's so much going on that you don't really concern yourself with the losses, you know.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, I haven't thought about it.
You know, and especially as something like Rogers, you know, such a big corporation that I think they see it as more of the thrill of being an owner, and the fact that when you're there, it's such an experience to put a handle on. So. And obviously the fact that the Leafs are now kind of in that ballpark of all the sports and media kind of becoming the forefront of what people are watching on their phones and all that stuff, it's basically how could they not want a winner, you know? So they're probably going to get that in the next 5 years.
Sorry, are you referring to the Jays or the Leafs?
I'm actually referring to both.
Okay.
To be honest, in the next 5 years, I don't think the Leafs are going to win the Cup this year, but I can see the changes where I still think the Leafs need to do that like obvious throwdown. Like, whoa, I never would have thought they would have done that before. You know, like when they get a superstar and pay the money for them. You know what I mean?
Not Grabowski, you mean?
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Like the Kessel thing was kind of close, but it's like if they got a Crosby type player, you know, somebody who was, you know, a true hero of the nation, then that would be a statement that would definitely do that. But I mean, I think they're doing the right things in terms of trying to get the right players on the team, you know, but they could probably throw a little more dough at it to make it exciting.
Well, I mean, obviously in hockey, there's salary cap constraints and things like that. But I mean, I'll tell you, we spent a good part of the show tonight talking about the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I believe in that guy. I think you have a really solid base to build from in Toronto right now. And as much as it pains me as a Montreal Canadiens fan to say, things are looking brighter in Toronto than they are in Montreal.
Yeah, well, I mean, I keep forgetting that I'm on the air in Montreal, and, you know. I'm actually good friends with Mike Camilleri too, so that's kind of like a double stinger.
Well, that was the way he left town was that was a little auspicious. I look forward to talking to you about that off the record. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, sure. You know, he's a good golf buddy.
But, oh, okay.
I mean, in terms of that city, I mean, Our Lady Peace connection. I mean, that was our first real concert was in Montreal, so we have a massive feeling towards Quebec, and it's many cities. We used to do mini tours in Quebec because that was, you know, there were so many great little cities with great clubs, and people wanted to go to bars. We would play like Sherbrooke and Trois-Rivières and Jonquière and all these little shows, like spend like 2 or 3 weeks cycling Quebec, and that was how we broke through.
Well, that's I remember you guys getting a ton of airplay on Music Plus when I was growing up.
Yeah, our first show was at Backstreet, opening for the Tea Party.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, look at that. Tea Party comes up twice in 2 weeks, eh?
Such a terrible show that we had to stop during a song because we were so bad.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah. Jeremy, I have to tell you, there's when Jay, my co-host, and I were talking about having you on the show, Jay was really excited, and he reminded me of something that I had forgotten about. Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, Jeremy, on this radio station, while the Expos were still around, during the post-game show, they would always play We Are All Innocent. And,
really?
Yeah, and that's... are we in trouble now?
No.
I mean, Dave, man, you think I'm not an Expos fan? Come on.
No.
That's great.
And so that song, every time I hear it, I get goosebumps all over because they would play highlights of the game, especially when they would win.
And do you think about Vladimir Guerrero a lot when you hear that song?
Yeah, because it was usually him doing something because the rest of the team wasn't. But yeah, and the song is so hype, and every time I hear it, and even my baseball team, we were making a playoff run at the same time, and we were playing that song to hype us up before each game. So
cool, man. That's awesome.
I love that song. Every time I hear it, I get goosebumps. And also, I saw you at Woodstock 99. And
wow.
and I don't know if you remember the sea of Canadian flags out there, but it was just awesome. And just like the Tragically Hip, they wouldn't let any Americans near the stage. All the Canadian guys who were all up front.
How did they regulate that?
They would ask you for some sort of proof that you were Canadian while you were walking.
Yeah.
They had formed kind of a barrier about, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people in from the stage, and nobody would go, okay, he's from Montreal, let him get through, it's okay. It was great. I had a great time at that show.
I wish I had as raucous a story to say as that, but for me, my Our Lady Peace moment was opening for the Stones in Ottawa at Lansdowne Park. That was a fun show.
Cool.
It was,
that was very cool.
Your music is very anthemic, and wow, does that play well in a stadium.
Well, we actually had a few shows with the Stones, and I've, you know, always the one that we did out in Moncton was
at Magnetic Hill, yeah.
Yeah, that was like 100,000 people or something like that.
Unbelievable!
And it was like $150 a ticket.
Wow!
Remember that? And I remember we got to meet them before the show, and Mick kind of came in, and he was just like, "How about that crowd, boys?" You know, like. Just like dollar signs in his eyes, you know, it was classic.
Amazing. Amazing.
It was classic, yeah.
Jeremy, please join us again on the program a little closer to when you guys come to town.
For sure, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time. And just got a message. George says hello, and he'll see you at dinner tomorrow night.
Ah, perfect. All right, thanks, guys.
Take care.
Okay, see you later.
That's Jeremy Taggart. Thank you so much, sir. Wow, that was fun. What a cool guy.
Yeah, really, very well. He's a rock star. Come on, he's laid back. You know, he's not. You know, it's another day. You know,
I think whatever. It's, but it's that wonderful Canadian attitude and sensibility that we all love so much, and that I'm such a big fan of on the Kaufman Show.
Yeah, Canadian bands are cool. We're just cool.
Wait till you hear. I don't know if we can follow that up, but wait till you hear the Canadian artist that we're going to have on the show next week.
Okay,
I could not be more excited.
I'm excited too.
We'll leave it at that. We've got a couple of really good guests already confirmed for next week, and next week we're on late, which if you're listening to the podcast doesn't mean anything to you, but there's a Habs game next Monday night, so we'll be on at midnight to all of you that are listening live, either on the internet or on 990 Radio in Montreal. Tell me, do you think, Jay? Do you think they can hear my smile?
You know. Things that you learn in voiceover school is that when you smile, the commercial sounds so much better. So, yeah, you can hear a smile. You literally can.
Good, because it's from ear to ear right now, people.
I'm thinking, why,
we've gotten a lot of requests, so we're going to replay the Richard Burnett interview in about 15 minutes. This is The Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. We'll be right back. Said last week I'm going to play that song every week. That's Kiss Cam, Arkells. It's not the Arkells, it's Arkells.
Arkells.
Yeah, it's Arkells and Arcade Fire at Rogers Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Arkells.
The is just gone.
Yeah.
There's no the's anymore.
It's like when Hulk came out. It's not the Hulk.
Maybe it's a tweeting Hulk thing. It's trying to get rid of those three little characters.
Yes, the word the is going the way of the dinosaur.
I'll have to ask my buddy Nick what an Arkell exactly is.
An Arkell?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Maybe hey, play your cards right, you answer the question, you can win a hockey stick. We're going to be replaying our interview with Richard Burnett in about 10 minutes. We've gotten a lot of feedback on it, and yeah, that's the kind of radio we want to do.
That's the whole plan, Dave. That's exactly when you and I started meeting together and saying, you know, we wanted to tackle these kind of issues. We could talk about stats the whole time, but there are more important things in the world.
Stats kind of bore me, man.
Stats are boring, man.
I mean, and that being said, we're gonna qualify that by saying that Travis Reitzma can talk us stats until the cows come home, and they're a really important part of the measurement of games right now. And the way that stats have really come into their own in the last 10 years. You look at the Baseball Prospectus people. I said it the other day. I'll say it again. It makes me wish I'd paid more attention in math and science class.
Oh, especially baseball stats.
Right.
You know, I sat through Moneyball, and half of it was, well, you know, they didn't really get too deep into the arithmetic.
No, but more so in the book than in the film.
Right. If you look at the arithmetic of on-base percentage and the and your even slugging percentage is confusing to me. But, you know, I mean, the higher the number usually means a better thing, unless you're talking about ERA, of course.
Jeremy Taggart, you classy dude. Gary Carter in our thoughts. He just sent that out.
Did he just tweet that?
Yeah.
Class, my friend.
Hats off to you, sir. We will tell a wonderful postscript to our Gary Carter tribute a little later on in the show. Jay, please remind me.
Yes, I will.
And Roy and Dorval, if you're listening and you're not going to be listening later, do me a favor, call in at the commercial break. We got something to tell you. Only if you're not going to be listening. If you are, then you get to hear it with the rest of the world. If you're not, we'll give you the exclusive.
Roy and Dorval gets the exclusive.
Jay, I said it last week. That was the best. For me, that was the moment of the tribute.
Yeah.
It was the moment. Hearing him say that the best moments of his life were watching Gary Carter play ball, that was it.
It was touching. It really was. Yeah.
And
I feel a little lump in my throat when I think about it.
And I'm still, we got an email tonight from, or a tweet tonight from Mike Davis thanking us for the Gary Carter tribute. It's, you know, it's on iTunes. It's out there forever. And we're pretty proud of it.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard it yet, please go ahead and do so. I think even if you're not a huge baseball fan or didn't grow up in the 80s, I think you'll appreciate its content.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. I think that it doesn't matter when you became a fan, even if you only became a fan from reading all of the praise that's come out since May, since the kid got sick.
Yep. And my mother told me about it last week. She said that was fantastic. My mother doesn't know baseball from a kumquat, but she said that was great. She knows who Gary Carter is. We used to go to the games. My mom used to take us to the games, sit right behind the dugout, and sometimes she gets a special gift from Mr. Bronfman because she worked she helped him out with his plane tickets and that when she was working at Seagram's.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah, so she really really enjoyed the whole Gary Carter thing. She didn't even know he was sick. And she said she was crying during it. She got a little emotional. My mother.
Your co-host might have cried a couple of times when he went back and listened to it, too.
I saw you. A little glimmer in the eye there.
Hey, man, it's a big deal.
Yes, it is.
And it's surprising how hard it's hit across this town. Gary Carter was on the front page of the Journal de Montréal on Sunday. Bet you never thought you'd see baseball on the front page of the Journal de Montréal again. Gary Carter means a lot to this town.
I would like to see baseball, but not in this context.
I think we're going to take a break.
Let's do it.
And then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk again about, with Richard Burnett. We're going to re-air our interview about gay rights in sports. It is Gord Downie's birthday, and this is Steeplechase. I think this is one of the more beautiful songs he's ever written. And anybody who saw Gord with the Country Miracles on their last tour, this song was the highlight. This is the Kaufman Show. Happy birthday, Gord.
There's a cruel, crumpling sound from over yonder by the steeplechase. It's a sound coming down. Of a crowd, of an equine crowd, in the vacuum of its day. It's the sound coming down of an entirely different race. It's a sound coming down. Like El Palio sent splay and splay. sprawling into a cafe in an explosion of tablelets and trash. It's a sound coming down like a chuck wagon went straight. A little too far from Stampede Day.
Bailey across the line, going on Park. Bailey cuts in front. Shoots. Great play by Bailey. Bailey picked up the pass going down the left wing. Got a little bit of an angle on Park and just cut around towards the net right in front of Jackman, and he backhanded it over him.
Shakey took the puck over the blue line, and I think Shake deep Park out and gave me the puck, and I just cut in front, and I looked up and goalie had gone down, so I just flipped it over him.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in 60 seconds with Richard Burnett.
For convenience and no-pressure sales tactics, Honda Centreville have always made getting great deals on great vehicles easy. And now they've made it even easier. Join the Honda Centreville Facebook page and discover a new simplicity in finding the certified pre-owned vehicle that's right for you. Browse Honda Centreville's current inventory. Find exclusive monthly and weekly specials that you're sure to like. Honda Centreville. Sales, service, parts, and bodywork in the heart of downtown Montreal. Find them on Facebook by searching Honda Centreville.
This isn't a commercial to try and convince you to visit Bet365. It's more of a what could you possibly be waiting for type commercial. Of all the websites out there, Bet365 is the one that makes sense. Let's face facts. It's a respected and licensed UK company with members in over 200 countries. 200 countries! With over $100,000 in free cash to be won each year, it's time to get in on the action and get off the sidelines. Get the stats and make your plays at Bet365.net. It's your place to play.
We're going to bring in our next guest. His name is Richard Burnett. He's a writer, editor, journalist, and columnist. He's also a hell of an activist. We've all been reading $3 Bill forever. It was in the hour for as long as there was an hour. But now you can find it online. Richard Burnett, welcome to the Kaufman Show.
Hey, thanks, man.
How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I just got to say the ratings for the Super Bowl went up during Madonna's 10-minute thing there. I think a lot of gay fans tuned in because they gave it higher ratings than the actual game itself.
Are you saying that the gay fans weren't watching the Super Bowl?
I think they were, but a lot more of them tuned in for that, I'm sure.
Well, she's a gay icon, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that maybe the NFL was skewing it that way.
No, but the NFL is still got a long way to go, just like all the other major league pro leagues, man.
Well, if anything, the NFL has, I mean, I was reading on your blog today that you have interviewed the three NFL players who have come out of the closet.
Yeah.
Now, I would imagine that that's three more than most sports, right, in North America?
Well, you know, there are just six gay male athletes from North America's four major pro leagues who have probably come out. And of those six, I've interviewed four of them. NFL offensive lineman Roy Simmons, former Green Bay Packer and Atlanta Falcon Esera Tuelo, Major League Baseball utility player Billy Beane, and of course NFL running back David Cope, who came out like back in 1975. That was like the Jurassic era for sports when it came to gay people, man.
Was he blackballed when it happened?
Well, he was not really blackballed. He was out of the game by that point. He wrote a biography that went to the top of the New York Times. And then he went on to open up a linoleum store in L.A., which he continues to run. It's a family business. Had it been 20 or 30 years later, I think he would have become a national hero and a role model for a lot of young people and an example for all the rest of gay athletes and leagues to say, well, listen, this is cool, and this guy is a hero.
Richard, bear with me for a second. We're going to play a clip from Brian Burke from the Strombo show last week.
Watching the acceptance that my son got when he came out in the hockey community at Miami University. This athlete that has the courage to come out is going to find that that hill is a lot less steep than he thinks it is, that there's a lot of support. I know the players on our team have all spoken to me about it and said, absolutely, a gay player is welcome here. The best thing about my son coming out was I didn't have to take anything back. And that's what I tell parents is there is a chance. You know, you talk to statisticians, 10%, 15%, whatever it is, people who are born gay, and there's a chance that your child's going to be gay. So in our house, everything was about acceptance. No racial humor tolerated, no jokes about gay people, no jokes about handicapped people. It was all, everyone is worth your time. Everyone has dignity. Everyone deserves your respect. And so when my son said, Dad, I'm gay, the best thing was, I said, do I have to take anything back? I don't have to apologize for anything. I don't have to rebuild any bridge. And that's what I tell parents. And to the kids who are battling with coming out, it does get better. There is a support group, and you're entitled to live your life. So if that's what you need to do, that push, then there are people that care about you.
Amazing to hear those comments, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, Mr. Burke is absolutely incredible. I mean, not only did he march in the Toronto Gay Pride Parade with his son, I believe, in 2009, but he, after his son passed, he participated in the 2010 and 2011 Toronto Gay Pride Parades. I think that even is such a tribute to his son's legacy. But I think also his son passing was coming out, but also passing was a bit of a catalyst to help Mr. Burke kind of lead this charge. And it's so good to hear him speak those positive words.
It absolutely was the catalyst, Richard. I don't think that I knew anything about Brian Burke being pro gay rights before. It just wasn't.
In fact, I was surprised to hear him come out as a pro-gay person. I mean, I just assumed that, you know, all of these people were blockheads and, you know, not very gay supportive. And to hear this guy, this rough and tumble, you know, hockey coach, general manager, come out and support gay rights, I was like, wow, this is incredible. It really, to hear something like that come from out of the blue from somebody that you really don't expect to hear it from. And maybe, you know, clearly, obviously, I was not giving him the credit he was due. But, I mean, just to hear those words come from his mouth, I think meant a lot to a lot of people.
We're in conversation with journalist and gay activist Richard Burnett on The Kaufman Show. Richard, I've noticed that you're a big Jackie Robinson fan. I was wondering, and really I make an assumption when I look at it, that that's what you're looking for out of a professional athlete. You want to see another Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, you know, there are only a handful of athletes who are bigger than their sport. And I'm thinking of the legends like Rocket Richard and Jackie Robinson, Billie Jean King, Muhammad Ali. Jackie Robinson, I mean, it would be ideally what we need is a gay Jackie Robinson to come out. I mean, the crap that athlete's going to have to take, I think, at the beginning is going to be awful. I mean, but coming out at the height of a player's career is what we need. And right now, like, you know, the Rangers and Islanders have had to warn fans against chanting homophobic slurs at games in New York. Athletes are still cussing each other out or insulting referees by using the F word. Being gay is still not acceptable to many football fans across Europe and South America. But and on the flip side, athletes, gay athletes, are more interested in signing big contracts and multimillion-dollar sponsorships than coming out. And it kind of makes me think of Martina Navratilova, because she proved it is possible for gay athletes to hold a high visible place in sports. But unfortunately for her, she came out in an era where she had to pay a price. When she came to Montreal in 2006 for the Out Games, we sat down and she told me that staying in the closet would have cost her personal dignity. And she said, you can't put a dollar value on dignity. So I think today now we're, you know, we're only 5 years later after that. I mean, we're inching closer to a new day, I think. I actually believe the first major league male athlete to come out today, tomorrow, whenever, will be bigger than any other sports star on the planet right now, because he will win the hearts of an entire minority, as well as their friends and families. And I think there's a lot of sponsorship money to be made by playing that gay card.
Thank
today.
You. I've been wondering about that from the yeah. get-go. I mean, airlines advertise to gay people.
Yeah.
There are a lot of businesses out there that advertise especially to the gay community because they are the ones with disposable income.
That's right.
Now, why is it? Is it fear? Is it fear of rejection from teammates? Honestly, I don't get it, and I don't feel comfortable saying with the same authority as you, Richard,
yeah,
that somebody should come out. I don't have the qualifications to make that. And I know that you have outed a couple of people. I know that you outed Andre Boisclair, you outed Ricky Martin, which I kind of think is funny because I think everybody knew that Ricky Martin was gay.
Yeah.
But would you feel comfortable if you were to be given information that a professional athlete was homosexual? Would you run with it?
Not really. You know, in the case of Ricky Martin and the case of Andre Boisclair, they had done and said things that I thought were hypocritical when it came vis-a-vis gay civil rights, and I thought it was best to out them, to show up their hypocrisy. I think to out somebody just for the sake of outing them, I think is not conducive to helping the process, and it's, to drag, you know, coming out is the most liberating thing a gay person can do. It's something that straight people really don't know.
No, we can't comprehend. I can't comprehend it.
But it is such a huge moment of liberation that why would I want to steal that moment from somebody? I think people need to come out on their own at the proper time in their lives. However, you know, I'm going to do my best to kind of nudge the conversation forward and, you know, encourage them. But somebody's going to have to, you know, at some point you got to have guts and you got to stand up and go, yeah, man, this is the right thing to do. Everybody who has come out that I've talked to, celebrities, athletes, or whatever it is, after the fact always say, you know, it was the best thing I did. They were scared before, but afterwards they always say, to a T, I swear to God, except for maybe with the exception of Rupert Everett, who's still miserable that he's not making enough money. But everybody else is saying, you know, it's the best thing I ever did.
We are just finishing up with Richard Burnett. Jay, do you have a question?
Yeah, Richard, we heard Brian Burke talk a little bit before about how talking to his team, nobody would have a problem, or none of the players would have a problem with that. Well, a few years back, I remember, I think it was around the time that Billy Beane came out, numerous athletes were interviewed about how they felt about it. Most of them said, sure, you know, I have no problem with a teammate being gay, but you heard garbage like, as long as he doesn't look at me in the shower,
right,
and things like that. Are athletes, I mean, this is just a few years back now, really ready?
I think most players are more ready than we give them credit for. Glenn Burke, who is one of the gay athletes that came out. In fact, actually, he came out during his career. This is an incredible story. I mean, this is a guy that's credited with inventing the high five. But he was playing with the LA Dodgers, and he was traded to the Oakland A's First of all, Al Campanis, Dodgers general manager back then, Al Campanis, offered Glenn Burke $75,000 to get married to a woman, and Burke flat out refused.
Campanis was the same guy that said that that black people have
they don't have the brain skill to manage teams.
Phrenology 101.
Yeah. And so Burke was traded after he refused to end his friendship with Spike Lasorda, the gay son of then Dodgers skipper Tommy Lasorda. Tommy Lasorda is in denial about his gay son and who passed away from AIDS. Anyway, Burke was then traded to Oakland, and it basically killed his career, which I think is ironic because Tommy Lasorda talks about, you know, playing baseball with the Montreal Royals with Jackie Robinson, and he turns around and does something despicable like this. But anyway, Glenn Burke passed away from AIDS in 1995, and one of his best friends is this filmmaker called Doug Harris, who last year released a documentary called Out about Glenn Burke. And Doug Harris said, and I quote, "The players had no problem with it. They loved him as a person despite his sexual orientation. He was a part of the team. They were upset, sad, pissed off when he was traded. That was the beginning of the end of his career, the players didn't have a problem with it. Bottom line is what it boils down to."
Do you think that Montreal is a good city for a player to come out in?
You know, I once asked Philippe Alou how he would treat or how he would if being gay would affect the player's evaluation. And he turned to me, he wasn't really happy with the question, but he gave me a great answer. He said, you know, there are a lot of killings in this world. There are a lot of lies and stuff like that. He said, why would a player being gay affect his evaluation? He said, as far as he was concerned, whether a player was gay or straight, made absolutely no difference to the game. And what you do on the field between the white lines is all you got to do is just play baseball.
Richard, I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah. That's really it. It's about the game. And it's amazing. You know, we played a clip right before you came on about how individual games don't matter.
Yeah.
And really, it's about the the opportunity to affect social change.
Yeah.
And, yeah, when Martina Navratilova came out, it was something. But golf, tennis, they don't mean the same. They don't pull the same weight.
Yeah. No, we need one of the four major league leagues in North America. And it's sad to say, but it's going to have to be a guy.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
It's going to have
100%.
To be. This is what I mean. You know, homophobia is not about lesbians. Homophobia is about guys in the locker room together.
Yep.
It's a guy problem. It's a straight guy problem, and it's going to happen because, all of us were saying, there's a lot of sponsorship money to be made by playing the gay card today. And not only that, but whichever athlete does it first, I swear, they are going to become a hero for an entire generation. Not just gay kids, but a lot of people like you and me, who, you know, we just want somebody to come out and be on our box of Special K, looking at us in the morning, going, "Yeah, man, it's cool to be gay."
And you know what, Richard? It's about damn time.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what else to say other than that. It's about damn time.
Yeah.
And the longer that it goes, I think the harder it's going to get.
Yeah. Well, you know, segments like this one on your show help make a difference, you know, a little bit, inch by inch, day by day.
Good. We'll keep at it as long as you keep fighting the good fight, too.
Yeah, man.
Richard Burnett, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me on the show. Good night.
Good night. Back to the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, here for another hour, give or take.
Give or take?
Give or take. This is City in Color, Dallas Green, with the birthday boy. We'll give him his due in a second, but City in Color in town, roughly 10 days from now. Fingers crossed, guys, I'm working on it. Hopefully we'll have a giveaway for that show next week. Fingers crossed. Take it away, birthday boy. And here we are. Jay, the phones have been quiet tonight.
A little bit. Nobody wants a hockey stick.
I know everybody's listening because I see you on Twitter and Facebook. But were you guys afraid about talking about gays in sports? What's going on
or
here?
Or Gomez, one or the other.
I don't think, well, we know from listening to other shows that people aren't afraid of talking about Gomez. Maybe they're afraid of how I'll react from the way I reacted to John in Denver.
Yeah, Dave, you're a little harsh on him.
Oh, well, you know what? Everybody's a little harsh on Scott Gomez.
That's
Everybody
right.
needs to chill out. Dave Stubbs, the man. Former WWF referee.
Dave Stubbs?
Yeah, man. Check out his Twitter feed, Habs Inside Out. He posts old pictures of him as a ref at the Forum with, like, Andre the Giant and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez, you never know, huh? You never know.
You'd also never know that I was a wrestling fan when I was a kid. I can remember going to the Forum and seeing Andre the Giant with my papa.
With your papa.
With my papa. He loved wrestling. My grandfather adored wrestling.
I saw the Ultimate Warrior fight the Honky Tonk Man in, I guess it was around 1988. sitting in the second row and just smelling the steroids. It was awesome.
I hope everybody enjoyed that. That was the 1 30-second segment of wrestling that we will ever have on this program.
Yeah. Ever.
That's it. That's it. It's gone. But no, Dave Stubbs, please, everybody go read his article on Scott Gomez. It shows the heart that Scott Gomez has, the love that he has for this city. And $7.3 million, half of that is taxable in the province of Quebec. So next time you go to a doctor, next time you drive on a road that isn't destroyed,
next time you play three games in one day at a pond hockey tournament, just think of Scott Gomez. And you know what? He hasn't gotten a chance, really, because he's been out with his injury, and he hasn't been around the locker room. He hasn't taken part in any interviews or anything like that. He hasn't really had a chance to defend himself. I mean, not like he...
He does to Stubbs, Jay, and it's fantastic.
Yes, and it's deserved. He needs a say as well. Everybody relax.
Can you actually go and copy-paste that article onto the Coffin Show
Absolutely.
Facebook page?
Yeah.
Might as well copy other people's greatness. Might as well.
I'm on it, Dave.
Thanks, buddy. All right, let's go back to the phones. 514-790-0990. Francis Ford Coppola on line one. Francis, good evening. George, that's you, because you made a movie for us. I'm calling you Francis Ford Coppola.
Thank you so much. First of all, my name is George.
Yes, hello, George.
I'm Greek.
We all know you.
I'm a Habs fan. And no, my name is not George Strombolopoulos, but I'm glad he's tuned into the show, which gives this show a lot of credibility as far as I'm concerned, because I love George. Now, I don't want to stroke your ego here, okay, but I'll tell you one thing that I love about your show, first of all, is that you guys are not your average sports show. That's what I love about it. You touch areas. You touch gray areas. You touch areas that people don't want to go to. You're trendsetters, okay? And that's why I believe in you guys, and that's why I keep on supporting your show and keep on tuning in every Monday.
You're making me blush, George.
Well, you made me blush before, you know. That's what I tweeted online. I'd like to talk about two things if you'll give me the chance, okay?
Of course.
Number one is about your issue about gay rights and sports and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then after that, I'll just want to say something about Gary Carter, if you'll allow me to say that as well.
always.
Okay, as far as the gay rights or coming in sports, okay, what's happening is that my generation, at least, we were sort of like grew up with sort of blinders, like on the side of the road. You know, we couldn't see to the left of us, and you couldn't see to the right of us, sort of like brainwashed. But what I'm glad to say is that as society educates itself and matures, like I have, okay, you start to see the other point of view, and you start to understand, and you start to accept people's rights. And that's the important thing. Now, unfortunately, as far as I'm concerned, though, the way I see it, discrimination, okay, is going to slowly fade away. It's not going to be a fast process, okay? That's the sad part about it. But you know what? At least they're starting to become inroads into this area, all right?
Well, just having someone like Brian Burke at the head of the table gives it a lot of credibility that really it's about time that the other general managers in the National Hockey League stand up and stand with Brian Burke.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they need a high profile figure, okay, so we can rally around the troops. That's what I'm basically saying.
Right.
Okay, absolutely. I agree totally with that. You know what? I can honestly say that growing up in my youth, I was probably homophobic just like everybody else. But you know what? As you get older and you start becoming more educated, you start becoming more mature, okay, you're going to understand that people deserve to have rights and they deserve to have the freedoms and their private homes to do as they wish. Like Pierre Elliott Trudeau once said, it's not the government's business to be in the bedrooms or something to that effect, if I remember correctly.
Well, you do remember correctly. I think you're paraphrasing, but that's exactly it. The nation has no business in the bedrooms of its people.
Exactly. Now, I'm hoping, okay, as I educate my children, and my children are a lot smarter than what I was growing up, because don't forget, my father came off the boat, and when he first came to Canada, it was the first time he had ever seen a black person, you know. So, you know, obviously you grow up in a different environment, but like I said, education and maturity will start to make inroads in our society, and I'm hoping that at least in my son's generation, that things will become a lot more tolerant, and people and any kinds of racial discrimination or persecution or sexual discrimination hopefully will all disappear.
Let's hope, George. Let's hope. And as you said, it takes time. But
it's got
to become part of the conversation. It needs to become the concept that there are people out there that think that this is a choice baffles my mind. There's no choice involved. You're born gay or you're born straight. There's no I'm on the right track, baby. I was born this way. I heard she wrote that in 10 minutes, by the way. But it baffles my mind. You really think that there's a choice involved in this? No, I mean, not you, George, but one. What's your point on Gary Carter, George?
Well, what my point on Gary Carter is, you know, Gary Carter touches my heart a little bit more than the average person because, to be honest with you, I lost my dad to cancer when he was 53 years old. So I know what it's like to, you know, experience, you know, a man still in his prime and still in his life, enjoying life and having so much life ahead of him and enjoyment and be able to enjoy the little things in life. And I know how cancer affects the family and how suffering is not only for the person who has the cancer, but it affects the whole family. You know, so that touches home a lot. And there's one film in particular that every time I watch on television, all right, my son, I'm the kind of guy that is, I'm very tough on the exterior, but I'm very soft in the interior as far as my emotions are concerned. And I'm very proud to say that I have absolutely no fears in saying that. When I see a movie that's a tearjerker, you'll see me cry, okay? So there's one film in particular that really hits home for me, and one of them, it's Field of Dreams, okay? There's one scene, and especially in the movie, where my son, every time he sees me, seeing this film, he sees me sobbing, and he once asked me, why are you sobbing? Because I said, you know what? I miss playing ball with my dad.
Oh, George, you're going to make me cry, hey? Man. Come
but
on.
But it's true, Dave. You understand?
Yeah,
I
get it.
That scene in the movie, Dad, Will You Play Catch With Me? That's a very emotional scene.
It sure is.
So when I think about baseball and I think about Gary Carter and I think about you know, his battle with cancer, that just like hits home with me. And I thought I'd share that with you guys tonight.
George, thank you.
Keep on doing the great work, and I'll keep on tuning in. As long as I'm alive on this earth, I'll be tuned into the Kaufman Show.
Pop, pop, fizz, fizz,
Dave,
George. Thank
care.
You very much.
You're
we appreciate
doing a great
it.
Job.
Thank you.
What a good guy that George is. Before we go to Travis Reitzma, Eric, and then a commercial break. Okay, Jimmy? Hello, Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great. How are you, man?
I'm doing fine. Hey, right on with that caller just before. I was just about to say that I was listening to the Gary Carter on the iTunes, and every time that I listen to it, me and my dad are not close right now, but it brings back the memories that when we would go to the Olympic Stadium, and I'm a little bit younger than you guys, so me, it was Henry Rodriguez, and him letting me throw an O'Henry bar on the field made me feel like I was a champ.
Hey, man, I was one of those kids throwing O'Henry bars, too. How old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay, I'm 31. I'd say that's roughly in the same neighborhood as far
and
as
there
that.
Was no better feeling in the world than Mike Lansing. I traded, actually, a signed Joe Carter, Roberto Alomar, and John Olerud baseball for a signed Mike Lansing baseball.
Wow. And the guy who traded that with you is sitting there listening to TSN 990 on the internet laughing his ass off right now. That's hilarious.
That is hilarious. And another one quick anecdote really quick.
Yeah.
That my mom told me this week is I was such a Habs fan that we went camping, and the first time I went in the outhouse by myself because I was too scared before to go, I had dropped my Expos hat on. And before my grandfather came, I was getting undressed to jump in and go get it. But I just thought I'd pass that along, and great show as always, guys.
Eric, thanks for the happy stories. You are winning right now for our call of the night, so stay on hold, and during the commercial break, Jimmy will get your information, and if it holds up, you'll win a hockey stick.
We have a nomination.
I'm assuming he's happy, and he was just put on mute.
Yes.
He would have been.
He didn't hang up, did he?
No, he's
I'm
still
sure
there.
He'll call back.
He's still there. He's still there, and we appreciate his call. When
we appreciate all calls.
Damn straight.
All calls, hockey stick or not.
That's right.
We want to hear from our people.
There isn't always going to be a hockey stick to give away, people.
No, there's not.
When we listen a little more Sam, and then, I don't know, who's advertising on the next one? Is it Shea Perret? Everybody always wants the Shea Paray ad.
Chrysler, Snakes Poker Club.
Chrysler and Snakes Poker Club. Oh,
how come I never get to hear my sexy voice?
Can you arrange for a McLean's Pub ad at some point tonight?
I'll definitely find one.
All right.
Thank you.
Done.
I just like the sound of my own voice.
Well, then you're in the right business.
Thank you.
This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back in a minute with Travis Reitzma.
Carnations, red roses, and yellow daffodils. Don't forget the flowers someday. I know you will. Displays of affection and all good intentions. Why don't you just send me your will? Don't forget the flowers someday. I know you. Too seriously. Ooh. I can't ever explain why I don't feel your pain. Ooh.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar. Little Wilco to bring us in from being there.
Wilco. Oh,
I love this song. And, you know, Wilco is not the opening of our show anymore.
No, it's not.
We have a new theme song.
Yeah. So I like the old one, though.
I know you do, but I've got a soft spot for a song called Deadlines by R. Kells.
Okay.
And
oh, it's your show.
There was a, that, too. There was a big...
oh, man.
There was a big fat F word right at the minute and 21-second mark of Deadlines. And... bless those boys in the Arkells, because they sent me a copy tonight. They edited it out themselves. They edited the big F right out.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks,
really
guys.
Appreciate
Thanks,
that.
Nick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim. I think Tim did the editing. We appreciate it. And we'll keep rocking your tunes. Now come back to Montreal and play a bigger venue, and I promise you we'll get more people there and we'll fill it. And it's going to be awesome. Our next guest is the weekend editor at The Scores, Getting Blanked, a website I'm very familiar with, one of the most influential baseball blogs around and easily the best in the country. Travis Reitzma, welcome to the show, buddy.
How you doing, guys?
Oh, we're great, man. How are you?
I'm pretty outstanding, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, do tell.
I'm pretty good. Well, I mean, just listen to the show. It's been awesome. I mean, the quality of guests. Myself maybe not included, but the quality of guests, they've been awesome. I mean, the Richard Burnett interview was amazing.
Thanks, man.
Like I say, it's one of the reasons you guys are I think, one of the best radio shows in the country.
Oh, so, stop
it. Come on.
I'm not even making that up.
Do we have another hockey stick?
Yeah, I was actually going to ask if I'm eligible for that or not.
I don't think so.
We'll get a baseball bat or something.
I wouldn't use it. I mean, I don't know. I can't even skate, so it's better to go to somebody else.
You can't skate?
I know it's heresy for a Canadian to say that.
Wow.
I was always into baseball, you know. I loved hockey. I still do, but I could never play it, much to my father's chagrin.
Well, Travis is from Windsor, Ontario, and I imagine that makes you quite close. I know you cover the Jays for Getting Blanked, but... Mm-hmm. Are you a Tigers fan?
No, I actually grew up in a little town called Cobourg, Ontario.
Oh, we know Cobourg. Come on. It's you hit Cobourg and you know you're 48 minutes away from Toronto.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And so I grew up a Jays fan. I've been living here for living in Windsor for about 8 years. I don't know, my allegiances to the Tigers are more, I just have a lot of friends who are Tigers fans, so you know, I end up going to a lot of their games, obviously, because it's literally a 15-minute tunnel bus ride across the border, and, you know, you're right there, so.
How many Canadians would you say are at those games?
this city is filled with Tigers fans. It's one of the baseball hotbeds of the country. Actually, I'm finding out how competitive amateur baseball is in this area.
Really?
Yeah, it's quite impressive. In fact, there was a couple of people drafted in the area. One guy to the Yankees out of high school, and so it's a pretty competitive area down here for that. There's a lot of baseball down here.
Do you remember Joe Siddle?
No.
Joe Siddle was from Windsor, Ontario, I believe. Somebody double check that for me, please. But Joe Siddle, I believe, was from Windsor and made up an all-Canadian battery in Montreal with Denis Boucher.
Well, there you go. See, you said earlier that you're not as good on the modern stuff. I'm not as good on the older stuff.
Well, good. We'll combine forces, Travis, and together we can become unstoppable.
We will take over the world.
So, really, man, we got an open forum right now. Obviously, baseball is, we're a couple of weeks away from spring training. What do you have your eye on?
To be honest, I'm, you know, that whole pitchers catchers report thing, it's exciting for about a day. I mean, and then you realize that competitive baseball is still a long way off.
Sure, but at least it's
so
baseball, right?
I have my eyes on to, you know, the start of the regular season, and can't wait for the Jays to get underway, so.
Now, I've heard rumors about Manny Ramirez potentially being on the radar for Toronto. Do you think that could happen?
I mean, I don't think so, but I, you know, you've heard some other teams, the Athletics and the Orioles, or two other teams. I mean, Manny Ramirez at this point, he's going to come in on a minor league deal. So there's very little risk if he causes trouble or is, you know, not very good. You can just release him. It's no harm done. But to be honest, I don't know where he would fit on Toronto's roster.
I mean, that's sort of what I was thinking, Travis. It just doesn't seem to make sense for what that team is trying to achieve right now.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue whether or not they're actually contenders this year. I'd argue that a lot would have to go right for that to happen. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, they already have, you know, your Adam Lind at first base DH and Embiid Encarnacion. And I just don't see where Manny Ramirez would fit into that, really. He's not going to play outfield anymore. And so, I mean, you're looking at a DH, and, you know, is he any, like, we don't know if he's any good anymore. He hasn't played professional baseball in almost a year now, so.
Well, Anthopoulos was already quoted as saying that he had no desire to go after Guerrero because Encarnacion was so solid at DH. So I don't see them going after Manny for that, unless there's something going on with Encarnacion that hasn't been made public. But it just seems like such a counterintuitive move to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He makes a little more sense for a team like the A's. I think that if he has some value and he makes the roster at a spring training, you know, you can flip him at the deadline and get something for him if the A's are in contention. But for the Jays, I just don't see the point in doing that. I don't see where he fits in.
Do you think the Jays are becoming Canada's team? Or do you
think
they are?
I mean, you mentioned, I think it was last week, where you said that they've done a lot of outreach to places like Montreal, and obviously they've gone out west with their caravan and all that. I'm kind of living, you know, the Southern Ontario thing, so I don't know how much they really reach out to the rest of Canada, but I would think that they are.
Well, for me, it was just nice to see some sort of semblance of Major League Baseball here, Travis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've heard rumors, too, that, you know, at some point they might play an exhibition game or something at the Big O if it's still viable. I guess you hear that kind of being tossed around. I think that would be a really good token of goodwill to the city of Montreal to kind of get professional baseball back in that stadium.
It's amazing. It's amazing how many Ontarians I've heard from that are behind that.
Well, and, you know, it's funny because I think I tweeted out a few days ago that I'm wearing my Montreal Expos cap, my tricolor tri-panel one, in honor of Gary Carter. And you'd be surprised, like, even down here in Windsor, I get more comments on that than I do on I'm wearing a Jays hat. It could be just because of the retro sort of hipster nature of those old Montreal caps. But, you know, there's some people who I think genuinely miss the Montreal Expos, even people who maybe weren't, you know, big fans.
Yeah, I think it's about not knowing what you've got till it's gone.
Yeah, for sure.
We're just finishing up with Travis Reitzma from The Score. Travis, why don't you tell us about the Gary Carter article you're working on?
Well, right now I've been in contact with a few people. I was going to have it up last week, but it just seemed too rushed. I kind of want to take my time with it. I'm talking to Rich Turfry or Buck 65, however you want to know him. I talked to you. I'm just sort of asking some people who are maybe more connected, because I was only 7 or 8, I think, when Gary Carter retired. So my knowledge of him is limited, so I'm asking people who have more knowledge of him, just what he meant to the city of Montreal, what he meant to them personally, and hopefully it'll be up sometime this week on Getting Blanked, and hopefully the response is good.
We can't wait to read it, Travis. I can't wait to see what all people, and you know what? Don't just limit it to Montreal, because the reach across this country is incredible. I'm going to tell a story before the show ends, and you should check it out. It's sort of a postscript to our Gary Carter tribute, and I think it'll show you just how much people care across the country.
A friend of mine who grew up a Montreal Expos fan, actually grew up in Ottawa, so I'm hopefully doing that as well. So
I know it's a tough issue to write about. And
yeah, it is, and I think your last caller there, I kind of missed part of it because I was calling in, but you know, talking about the personal connection, and I lost my mom to a brain tumor, and it's difficult to write about that kind of stuff, and I think I really feel for the family too and what they're going through, because it's not your average illness, that's for sure.
Travis Reitzman from The Score, thank you for your time, my friend. We'll
thank you guys.
We'll speak soon, and keep up all the good work. Big fan of yours.
Thanks a lot.
Have a good night.
You too.
Travis Reitzman from Windsor, Ontario. Home of Joe Siddall.
Hey, look at that. Old Kaufman knows something.
Wow, I'm impressed.
I remember Joe Siddall. I remember that being a big deal, his Canadian battery.
Career batting average wasn't so impressive, I'll tell you
that. 208?
169. In 142 major league at-bats.
Oh, wow.
Played with the Expos, the Marlins, and finally with the Tigers.
Joe Siddall, 101. Thank
you. There it is.
Wow, we should get him on the show.
Why not?
And we won't mention the batting average.
No, we won't.
We are celebrating Gord Downie's birthday. So we're going to turn this up, and we'll be right back on The Kaufman Show. Mazel tov to Jim Bryson for having a baby today. That's him on the keys. This is The Kaufman Show. We'll be right back. Back to The Kaufman Show. What I would do for the rest of that audio, Jimmy. Oh, man. I love the way that song just changes, though, from that demo version to the final finished product. And, well, when the segment ends, we'll Let There Be Sunlight and Let There Be Rain.
I love the harmonization.
The Brokenhearted Will Love Again.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song. And so excited for my little trip to New York City to go see Bruce Springsteen in April. That's going to be pretty awesome. And now I know I'm going to get to go see Our Lady Peace the week before.
We are all goosebumps again.
And I love that he brought up Vladdy. Like, oh, do you think of Vladimir Guerrero?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Of course I do.
Let's bring up our next guest. I'm very excited for this. I've got to say, I found him this weekend. I found him on Twitter this weekend. Who knew that Brett Laurie had a Babelfish translator? Fantastic. I mean, really, my world is brighter now. I can understand things. When I interviewed Brett Laurie, my reaction was, this is a child. He has the stars in his eyes. He's got that. There's an innocence to Brett Laurie. But it's mixed in with this swagger that if you follow him on Twitter, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I believe that he's in Arizona right now following around Brett Laurie, monitoring his thoughts and his Twitter feed. And, well, let's just bring him in. It's the Brett Laurie Babelfish. Welcome to the show.
Well, greetings.
How are you?
In theory, actually, I've had to occupy a host to translate verbally. I'm well, thank you.
Oh, well, that's okay. We take it how we can get it, Babelfish. And we appreciate it. Now, tell me, Brett Laurie, he likes to shine, doesn't he? What's he trying to say when he talks about being happy to get the opportunity to shine? What does that mean? Explain that to a 31-year-old.
Well, how did he say shine?
He was talking, it was in the context of his first home run. And he said, yeah, I got the opportunity to shine a little bit.
That would be the opportunity to distinguish himself as an outstanding member in the field of professional baseball.
Oh, wow. I love you. You make the world a lot easier to understand. And because of that, we are now going to, without any further ado, go through the top five Brett Laurie tweets.
I'm reading them right now. They're very funny.
Well, we're going to read out a Brett Laurie tweet, and then the Babelfish translator is going to translate it for us. Once again, follow this very, very, very important translator on Twitter.
Do you wish I attempt to duplicate Brett's emotion?
Now, are you reading both Brett's tweet and the translation? Because if so, then go ahead, because I think you can do a better job than I. You know the specimen much more intimately than I.
You have me stumped.
All right, I'm going to read Brett Laurie, and you're going to translate.
Okay.
All right, so it's going to start right now. Brett Laurie tweet number one. Solid game by the boys. I'm fired up. At Morrow 23, got his first 2 BLE play of the year. Exclamation, exclamation. 165 innings to many. Beaut. And punches ticks. Whoops. Translation.
A complete and victorious game for my team. I'm thrilled for Brandon Morrow. He of his renowned strikeout ability, who after 165 innings finally had his first double play turned for him.
See, beautiful.
Doesn't it just elevate the discourse? It's everything we're trying to do on this show. I really appreciate it. Number two, phone's gonna die. Bush. Translation.
The battery life of my phone is close to being exhausted. This situation lacks any quality.
Number three, and this was this tweet is a reply to a Ricky Romero tweet showing a picture of Ricky Romero's new Bentley. At Ricky Road 24, dude, that is so grande leagues. Shotgun? I'll D up extra for you. Hashtag show hip.
Ricky, such a car is a remark on your status. Can I sit in the front seat? I'll be extra agile on defense to aid your pitching results.
Amazing. Number four, that song is like UV drank a case of Red Bull without drinking one. Hashtag crank dat.
This song energizes me. Turn the volume up very high.
And finally, oh, written in the stars. You think it's not? So ready to rock the season. Like fired up, hashtag get ready.
Don't doubt my belief that outstanding occurrences will take place this season. Fate will illustrate my excitement is warranted by my preparation. Prepare yourself.
Laurie's interpreter. Follow him on Twitter at TransLauriate, TRANS, and then Laurie like Brett, and then 8ATE. Translate, but TransLauriate. Thank you so much. We look forward to hearing from you again when Brett Laurie gives us more wisdom and more work for you.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Have a good one. you know, I
babble fish.
I kind of thought that was funny.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I like that. I'm telling you, I started following him. Oh, I don't know. I guess a day and a half ago, and he had maybe 50 followers. He's up to 150 now. And like we said, it's not quantity, it's quality. And I see that a lot of the high quality people from my feed started following Trans Laureate because this is a funny dude.
Looking at Brett Laurie's tweets here, we do need somebody to translate. I mean, to decipher his cryptic lingo, if I may, because it's not easy.
I have spoken to a couple of people Brett Laurie's age that sound like that. They use words that I'm sure you see them at the bar.
All the time. All the time.
There is a whole lingo that, I have no clue.
You don't?
No, because I know words like Grody and Valley Girl. No, I honestly, man, I cannot comprehend half the things they say. And it's weird because I'm still 21 in my own head.
In your own head, yes. You'll never see 21 again, Kaufman.
Mm. Thanks, Jay.
You're welcome.
Okay. Jimmy, make me happy.
Needs to be happy.
That's right. And this is what that little demo turns into. And it's happy, and you can hear the crowd. And it's not that vindictive, she can take her taxi back to the dead of the night. It's redemptive. Sort of like the Kaufman Show. Thank you to Trans Laureate. This is the Kaufman Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kaufman Show. All right, kids, if you want to hear my Gary Carter story, you're going to have to stay tuned after 2 o'clock. We will end on one final segment after 2, but we're running out of time right now, so we want to give everything its proper time, and trust me, it's going to be worth feeling tired tomorrow morning. Who was it, the polemicist last week that said, long live Groggy Tuesdays? Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. Let's go back to the phones, 514-790-0990, 1-866-896-2546. Let's go to Expo in Redondo Beach. Hello.
How are you, gentlemen? How are you guys doing tonight?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Good to hear that a sports show has broken out in this late hour.
Well, it's good to be a part of it.
I've got a question for you guys, and maybe more specifically, Jay. Are Montreal Expo fans in Montreal turning to the Blue Jays? Is that what I'm sort of detecting? I'm hoping that's not true. But
you're smart to
happening?
Ask Jay because you know I'm biased. So go ahead, Jay.
Well, Jay's out there on the street. I mean, he's working. I mean, he's talking to the people at the bar. So what's the story there?
Well, you see, Dave is if I may speak for Dave, he's converted to Blue Jayism a little bit. I can tell he's kind of embraced the Blue Jays. To be honest with you, the feeling I get from the street and the people is that if there are no Expos, they don't really care about baseball right now. I think it takes a team in order for people. I mean, far be it for anybody out on the street to there's, you know, to go for a Toronto team is tough on
people.
It's
a tough sell. It's a tough sell
to people, especially baseball. I feel that after the Expos left, there's a void there when it involves the actual game of baseball. I mean, you're talking about Dave and I ourselves are, you know, we struggle at times to follow baseball in the modern era because there are no Expos anymore. And so, you know, for the layman who was an Expo fan but not as crazy about baseball as Dave and I are, I don't think they've embraced any teams. Some people have embraced the Red Sox, I've noticed, especially after their two World Series wins.
Well, a big part of that, Jay, was the Red Sox winning a month after the Expos left.
That's right. I mean, it kind of ended an era and started a new one, especially Boston being the closest city with a major league team. And Boston is closer to Montreal than Toronto is. Other than that, you don't hear much about the Blue Jays, especially to a staunch baseball follower.
Well, I'm sort of happy to hear that, given that really without Montreal, Toronto wouldn't be in the league. And also, Toronto did vote to contract the Expos.
Yeah, you know what? I had a conversation with a gentleman named Stephen Brooks, Expo. He's the vice president of business operations for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I called him on that, and I said that that is going to be your biggest obstacle when it comes to getting a fan base in the province of Quebec. And he said that was not the Rogers ownership. That was the prior ownership, and they would do anything to take that back. It's one of their biggest regrets. And this is the guy, he said it on the record, and this is the guy responsible for business operations for the Toronto Blue Jays. And he knows what a damaging thing that was. And I saw the olive branch in that the Jays came to Montreal and they spent more time in Montreal than they did in any other city on the tour.
Sure, because they went to the strip clubs.
You and your strip clubs, Steve.
Yeah, now I consider myself a baseball orphan. That's how I sort of am. And I get the sense that that's how a lot of people in Montreal probably consider themselves.
But Steve, let me just quantify it for you very, very briefly. For me, the big issue is that I can cheer for the Jays, and I've said this before. The highs will be great. The lows are nowhere near as low. As much as I want to throw myself behind the Blue Jays right now, if they lose, I don't really care. It doesn't upset me. It doesn't affect me the way that an Expos loss used to just get me.
Right.
And being at an Expos game and watching your team win for eight innings and blow it in the ninth, that used to just, it was soul-sucking. And I have never felt that feeling ever in the almost 8 years since the Expos have left town.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I feel the same way. I watch baseball occasionally. Fortunately, we get to see Vin Scully here, so that's very entertaining.
Yeah, lucky you.
But, you know, there's just, you don't feel the same way.
Well, thank goodness that Vin Scully's back for one more season, huh?
Let's hope it's a few more.
Let's hope so. Let's hope the Dodgers put something out on the field worthy of the man in the booth.
I hope so.
Thanks for the call, Expo.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Somebody asked me a question.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So See? Somebody... Oh, I thought you...
No, somebody literally asked me a question.
Well, Jay, you're a very integral part of the show.
Well, I guess I can be called the street guy, the ear to the street, because you know what? It's a legitimate question.
Well, no, but that makes me sound elitist.
Oh, you are. College boy.
I'll show you the grades. You won't call me that anymore.
Yeah. Well, at least you had grades.
What was the line? Somebody said something earlier, and I was like, yeah, I was probably either around the corner smoking or at Sam the Record Man.
One or the other, huh?
Yeah, I thought about Sam the Record Man. I walked by where Sam the Record Man used to be on St. Catherine the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And good memories. They, you know, anybody remember the days when they used to release albums at midnight? I lined up for Phantom Power at midnight.
You did?
Oh, yeah. I can tell you, and again, you know, it's Gord's birthday, and we're going to give Gord a few minutes here, and then we're going to come back on the other side of the break and wrap the show up, and I'll tell you all my Gary Carter story. But first, you're stuck listening to my story about Gord Downie. Buck 65 was on the show a couple of weeks ago and talked about how Gary Carter has had one of the single most influences on him ever. I think I feel the same way about Gord Downie. I don't really know how else to put it. I think I do. From a very young age, I've been listening to their music, and I listen to their music more than anybody else. And no matter how sad I've been or happy I've been or anything in between, that's always been where I've gone to. And no joke, Jay, I can remember every single hip album I've bought, where I bought it, when I bought it, and the means of transportation I took to come home and listen to it. Before Sound the Record Man, most of them were at the HMV in Rockland Shopping Center.
Okay.
And I used to rollerblade home afterwards. I can remember Live Between Us. My buddy Doug got me fully, completely for Christmas when I was 12. Up to here, I taped off my buddy Danny in grade 7. Road apples, my mom bought me at Costco. I must have been in elementary school on tape. And yeah, that band's meant a lot to me throughout the years. And for those of you along the way with me who didn't get it, you missed out on a big part of me. And that's really all I want to say about that. And Jimmy, find me a hip song to go out on, because we're not going to go out on that one anymore. But go find me Don't Wake Daddy. Type in Ottawa Don't Wake Daddy. That's a good one.
They're all good to you.
Most, yeah.
Well, they're good.
Yeah, and you know, and there used to be a few that I didn't like, and those have grown on me more than most. That's the one thing about that band. I very rarely like a Tragically Hip album on the first listen. I think the only one is the newest one, We Are the Same. That one really resonated with me off the start. I'd just come out of a breakup, and the Depression Suite was very redemptive for me. And this show this was National Arts Center, and this was pretty awesome.
He's not looking at anything, people.
No,
he just knows that.
Yeah.
He's just staring at me, and he knows exactly where it took place.
Jay, do you see the head bobbing in the third row?
Yeah.
That's me.
Is that you?
Yeah. You know how I knew?
What's that in your mouth?
It's the National Arts Center. Nothing.
Okay.
You know how I know? I was watching the video and thinking, hey, that was filmed close to where I was. And I realized, I'm like, hey, that guy's dancing just the way I was sitting in my chair grooving along to the song. I was like, oh, boy, it's me. Happy birthday to Gord Downie, one of the most important people I have ever come across. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be back for one more segment. Going to talk to you about Gary Carter. Jay, we're not going to get there, but I actually sing in this song.
Why won't we get there?
Because there's too many swear words in between here and there.
Oh, that's
on that
too
track.
Bad.
I don't know, Jimmy, if you can move it up to like... No, I feel like there's just too much of a chance of something being said on air that we...
That we may regret?
Yeah.
What, that hasn't happened yet?
Not that word. I think right before I say it, you hear Downie, he's trying to get the fans to sing. He's trying to get them to sing the end of the song. The line is "Sing to end all songs, to end all songs," and he's trying to get the fans to sing, and nobody knows the damn words. And at one point, he passes a mic to the guy, and the guy totally butchers it. And Gord goes, "Holy F! Is this a Blue Rodeo show?"
Really?
I swear to God.
Wow.
Jimmy, if you want to try, go around the 6-minute mark.
Yikes, here we go.
Let's give it a shot. You're going to have to turn it up when I twinge you. Oh, and there we are, hey? Wow. Wow. Quiet, but there you go. This is the Kaufman Show. We'll be right back. Show. Dave Kaufman, Jay Farrar, Jimmy G on the board, John Kakalakis helping us out. Great job tonight on the audio, John. We really appreciate it. So, going to share a story. I wasn't sure whether we should tell it on air yet, but I think it's time.
Sorry, I don't see any shame in it.
No, it's not about that. I just don't want it to come across the right way, the wrong way, but I don't think it will. So, here's how it goes. The Carter's tribute finished, and once again, check it out on iTunes. Download it, upload it, sideload it. Do what you got to do. We're all very proud of it. And we were so proud of it that after consulting amongst the group, we decided that we were going to reach out to the Carter family and see if they wanted to hear it. So I sent Kimmy an email and didn't hear back for about a week. And then got a very nice email. I was, it was a Saturday night. It was late. I called you, Jay. I was shaking. The Arkell show had just finished and I was standing around talking with the band and checked my phone and saw this email from Kimmy and was overcome. She asked for a copy and she asked for me to send it fast. And, they asked for a physical copy of it. So we got to work, and I told her that it would be given to FedEx first thing Monday morning. So we burn a copy, and we get it. I go to FedEx on Monday morning, and they it was $50 to send two CDs, and they told me that it would be in Florida, in West Palm Beach, with Kimmy by 10:30 the next morning. This is a Tuesday morning. It will be there by 10:30 Wednesday morning. I'm happy. They hand me a tracking number, say I can check the package online. 10:30 the next morning, the package is in Memphis, Tennessee. 11:30, the package is still in Memphis, Tennessee. And at noon, I decide to call. And I speak with a customer service representative. And I tell her that this package needs to get to Florida. And she says, I'm sorry, sir. There was some sort of an error and it'll be there tomorrow morning. And I said, that's not good enough. Well, we'll happily credit your account. I'm like, no, that's really not what I'm looking for. Do you know who Gary Carter is? No, I'm sorry, sir, I don't. Okay, well, do me a favor. Go find a supervisor that knows who Gary Carter is. 10 minutes later, I get a phone call from the president's office at FedEx Canada. And it's this wonderful woman named Julie Curry. She's in Toronto, and the next time I'm in Toronto, I'm buying her a drink. That's for damn sure. Julie Curry calls me from the president's office at FedEx Canada and says that she grew up watching Gary Carter play baseball. He's the reason that she loves baseball. What can I do for you? And I explained to her the story and that we'd put together this tribute, and the greatest of honors. The Carter family wants to hear it. And they expected it today. And I want it there today. So she tells me that there's a plane leaving at 5 o'clock, and she will make sure that the package is on the plane and gets to Florida and is delivered to them by 9. We hang up, and I'm happy. She calls me back 10 minutes later and says that the facility is locked, only open in the middle of the night. They tried to get somebody to open it, but it would be like finding a needle in the haystack. Is there anything else that can be done? And we sit there, and we put our brains together for a few minutes. And bless this woman. She comes up with the idea to get the Miami head office for FedEx to download the episode off iTunes. And they download the episode on 2 CDs off iTunes, and the manager drives it an hour and a half to Kimmy Carter's house in Palm Beach. And at 4:30 in the afternoon, I get an email from Kyle, Kimmy's husband, thanking me so much for it and thanking all of us for keeping Gary Carter in our thoughts and prayers, and saying that they are going to share the episode with Gary. Well, Jay, I lost it. I lost it. And I'm so touched that got all the way to Gary Carter, and that Gary Carter has heard our tribute to him. Because that's what we wanted. We wanted him to know how much people here love him. And he got to hear about your brother, and he got to hear your brother's song. And he got to hear about how Buck 65 has never tried drugs, and how Buck 65 has always tried to live an exemplary life because of Gary Carter and his gentleness and his sweetness. And he got to hear Earl the Pearl talk about how misunderstood Gary Carter was in Montreal. And he got to hear Roy and Dorval talk about how the greatest moment of his life, the best times of his life, were watching Gary Carter play baseball. And I got another thank you this morning from Kimmy. And that made me realize I wanted to share it with you guys, because she's not just thanking me. And Kyle Blomers, Kimmy's husband, wasn't just thanking me. They were thanking all of you. And I'm very proud of it. It's exactly why I want to be in radio. We want to affect change, and we want to make a difference. And with that one, Jay, I really think we made a difference.
That's a great story, Dave, by the way. And of course I've heard it before, and I remember you calling me, and it was pretty late, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I
thought we had gotten canceled or something. I said, oh, geez. And when you told me that, yeah, I got a little lump in my throat as well. And it's just, you know, it's a tribute to, you know, it's so, I don't know. I was kind of blown away by it. I said, really? You're kidding me, right? You couldn't even make up a story like that,
no,
you know?
No.
And it was such an honor. And thank you so much to, what was her name again? I'm sorry.
Julie Curry. Julie Curry. I told her that she took a faceless corporation and made it seem like a human being to me.
That's right. And it wasn't an issue of name dropping either. It's about having a heart and knowing that someone is ill.
Yeah.
And that their family could use this kind of a boost, you know? So, you know, I didn't say it during the tribute, but on behalf of my brother, Anakin Slate, Andrew Farrar, and myself, the Farrar boys wish all their best to the Carter family.
Yeah, I think everybody does, Jay. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think everybody knows how much we love Gary Carter around here, and we're not going to stop talking about him, that's for sure. Jimmy, you have a call there, or somebody wants to talk about Gary Carter? We'll allow it.
We'll allow that.
We'll allow it.
Why not?
All right, let's go to Adam on the phone. Adam, where are you at?
Hey, gentlemen. Calling from the South Shore. I'm just driving back home.
Welcome.
Was in deep thought and just thinking about my life and my family. And by some fluke, I kind of nudged the AM button, and all of a sudden, here you are with your story.
Well, we appreciate you nudging the dial.
Yeah. Well, it tell you this: you've got a new client of that courier service. What a story!
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. I mean, I got into TV myself to do that. You know, to bring change and to make a difference. Sometimes you go in and you try and work for a paycheck, and you're trying to raise a family, and you're trying to do the best you can, but you kind of forget the initial reason. Yeah, you have flashes of it from time to time, but then something like this happens, and you kind of take a little bit of a step back and say, hey, you know what, I'm really lucky to be where I am, and I'm really lucky to be doing what I love to do, and the least I can do is kind of give back and bring about change. In this city, you know, it's I don't know about you guys, but it's just been so negative in Montreal with the Habs for so long that everybody's just bitter and just down and out, and you know, this is obviously not news that's going to make the situation any better.
But it gives a whole other level to our appreciation of sports, and reminds us that who cares how many goals someone scores? It's about the measure of the man at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, in terms of what they do on and off, and you know, it's amazing. I mean, the one thing that I'll remember, you know, the one thing that for sure I'll remember Gary Carter with, and it'll always be that way, it's so funny because everybody shares the same emotion. It feels like 80% of people I speak to share the same emotion, as if to say, the greatest baseball that I've ever seen was when I was watching.
Oh, we lost him. No, there you're back. You're back. Adam, sorry. Please start that over. No, he's gone. Adam, if you we do want you to finish that thought. So please call us back, 514-790-0990. Jimmy, can you check on that, please? And we'll get back to Adam when I read this tweet. That's right. After I read this tweet from George, 11 to 2 my ass, Dave. 11 until the last customer served should be your motto.
I would know about that a little bit.
You know, careful.
There are legal ramifications involved, of course. We got Adam back?
Yeah, I think somebody at least. Let's see if it's Adam. Jimmy, there we go. Let's put him right back through. Adam, as you were saying, good sir.
Yes. Thanks for taking me back here. I know there's other people, so I won't be too long. But, hey, look, it's like you said, you're absolutely right when you turn around and talk about the measure of the man. And it's been tough for Habs fans. It's been tough for sports. I mean, obviously, we've been blessed with a few championships with the Alouettes, and we've been blessed with the Impact and what's going to happen in the next 6 to 9 months. But, you know, we take sport a little bit too seriously. I mean, I know we're passionate. I know we love our team. I know we want to feel that high that New York is living right now, being champions of the world and their sport and the whole nine yards. But you know, it's tough. It's tough to see what's happening. So my prayers are with their family, and prayers are with those who are going through this battle. And great story. Keep up the great work, and keep sharing stories like that, and try and go above and beyond. I know you do quite a bit. I follow some of the stuff you do, but always keep that in the back of your mind in terms of trying to go above and beyond what you do in radio, because you'd be surprised. You know, a little CD traveling from Montreal to Florida, if I'm not mistaken, could be someone's, you know, last mile. So keep it up.
Thank you. That's a
great call.
Yeah. And I want to thank our guests tonight, too. It was really fun to talk to Jeremy Taggart from Our Lady Peace, and gave me a whole nother level of respect for that band. Like I said, very anthemic music and
uplifting.
Yeah. And a great Expos tie-in, too, with Innocent. I want to thank Richard Bugs Burnett. Wow. That was one of the most interesting interviews I've ever done.
It was so good, we played it twice.
That's right. And you know what, Jay? We're going to talk about it more and more and more because
that's what we do.
That's right. And this is the one last taboo. And if you haven't, if you didn't listen to it, if you didn't hear it tonight, we had Richard Burnett on. He's a gay activist. He's a journalist. And we were following up on the Brian Burke conversation on George Strombolopoulos last week. It's time, and it's time for people to stop thinking of being gay as being different. And it's time that It's time for another Jackie Robinson. I want to thank Travis Reitzma, fantastic young baseball mind out of Windsor, Ontario. He is the weekend editor at The Score. Follow him on Twitter, too. And, oh, the Translaureate. That was fun. That was fun. We're going to have him on.
It was actually really funny.
Yeah, we're going to have him on again, and I'm going to tighten that up a little bit. And I think we're on to something with that guy. And next week, little teaser, we're on at midnight. Chad Cordero and the guy who sings this song. We've got Joel Plaskett on the Kaufman Show next week.
Amongst others.
Amongst others. Have a great week, everybody.
Listen up, kid. It's not what you think. Stayed out too late. Had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel. We're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you face down in our soup, some French restaurant. I saw Riviere de Loup last night at a tour. We burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
You've been listening to The Kaufman Show. Jay and I will be back next week.
I don't know. What'd that sound like?